Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. On this week's Coach K and Joe Show, CBSSports.com bracketologist Jerry Palm, Jasper High School girls basketball coach Ryan Ernie, and ARCA driver Bo Lamastis. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schulteis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and as always, joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schulteis. Ken, my Sharona.
I loved my Sharona when I was younger. I still love my Sharona. I never got to meet Sharona, but I can understand why everybody loved her. Hey, wanna let Alan Williams know he's just got that great, silky, smooth voice for our introductions and our lead-ins back onto the show. He just does a great job, and he makes this show so professional, Joe. So professional.
Well, I try, you know, I'm good friends with Alan, and I try to keep him down a notch, you know, though I don't want him to get a big head. You know, he might move away from Ligotti into a big city, and, you know, we don't want that. We want him to stay around here so he does our opens and stuff.
Well, Alan, Coach K thinks you do a great job, and so do a lot of our listeners, because I get comments all the time about how professional that sounds and how well done our show is for being something that started the way it has on internet radio, and they're just amazed at it. So Alan's a big part of that, and obviously Josh Houchin has helped us so much as well. So we certainly appreciate all their help.
You know, and also, just to mention, I want to go ahead and mention this, because I want to mention this a bunch of times today. We're taking this show out of the studio next Friday.
Oh!
Out of the studio.
Oh!
We'll actually have to get out of our pajamas to do the show next week.
I can't do my sit-ups and my planks and things like that while the show's going on. Wow. Where are we headed, Joe?
We are going to Buffalo Wings and Rings in Jasper, and I know if you're from Jasper or around Jasper, you know exactly where that's at. And Ann and Mike Wire and Mike Bartley and et cetera have invited us there, and we're going to be broadcasting live from 11 to 1 next week.
Yeah, and Ann Bennett does such a great job running the restaurant, and it's just a great place to go eat and have a few drinks and sit at the bar. It's kind of a place that everyone knows your name, honestly, so we'll be excited. So anybody that's in the area next Friday, come on out and spend the afternoon or early midday with us, 11 to 1. And we'll talk sports and anything else that comes up or listen to us live or by podcast. Joe, did we lose you? We may be having technical difficulties again, folks, so we'll have to see what's going on. Always disappointing when we have dead space or dead time in there, and since I'm not sure, just hang with us, folks, as we get the show moving again.
And we'll be back right after this.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we are joined by CBS Sports bracketologist Jerry Palm. Jerry, busy time of year for you, huh?
Oh, yeah, you could say that.
Jerry, it's great to have you. Coach K here. We got, I know you've got so much going on, but we want to pick that brain of yours. It's like talking to the bracketologist professor, and we want to find out a little bit about where we're at in the potential seeds and what's going to go on with the tournament. I know we've got some games to play, but we've got a lot of listeners who are interested in their team and whether they have a possibility of being in or being out. Let me ask you quickly, if you can, just to start off, who do you see as the top four seeds in the tournament?
Well, as of the bracket I just did, I have Indiana as the overall number one, followed by Miami, Duke, and Michigan State.
So I was wondering about Miami. You know, they played awfully well here through a long stretch of the season with huge wins against Duke and North Carolina. Of course, North Carolina is not the North Carolina we're used to, but still
right. Huge
wins. And as you look at Indiana, outstanding team, have had a couple games where they stubbed their toe. But when you look at overall, I think they're like 5-0 against top 25 teams. So I think at this point they're definitely deserving of that number one seed if they can hold serve as they move through. Tough game coming up with Michigan State. Does it get a little murky when you get in the 2 and 3 seeds?
Heck, the one seeds are murky. Selection Sunday, and I cannot positively identify a single team that is going to be a number one seed. And I know for sure, no question about it, they're going to be a number one seed. I do know I can describe what one of the number one seeds is going to look like. It's going to be whoever wins the Big Ten. I just can't tell you who that's going to be. The Big Ten champion will be a number one seed. Could be Indiana, could be Michigan State, could be Michigan, who still gets both those teams at home. But I don't know which one it's going to be, but the Big Ten champion is going to be a number one seed. Everything else is up for grabs.
So a team like Michigan State, who has IU coming into its home arena, and they're right there at the head of the conference, even though they don't have that top 1, 3, 4 ranking, they definitely can be a number one seed before we're done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no question. They can be the overall number one. There's no question about it. I mean, the Big Ten is so strong this year, top to bottom, but especially at the top, that whoever can emerge from this conference is going to be a number one seed, and there might be 2 or 3 number one seeds from this league.
Let me jump over to the SEC real quick. I'm just unsure about that conference, and they look like they've got 4, 5, 6 teams that could be in the tournament. Kentucky now with Nerland Knowles out. When you look at Kentucky, obviously you have to look at the record and the things like that, but do you incorporate the fact that their best players out of the lineup going forward?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. You have to take that in consideration. They are a team now that, you know, you have to have doubts about. If the tournament were today, in fact, I dropped Kentucky in the seeding of my bracket just because of the injury to Nerland Knowles. Well, and also in part because their best friend to win at Ole Miss doesn't look as good as it did a couple of weeks ago. The Rebels continue to slide. But also just the mere fact that they are not the same team they were. And we don't really have much evidence of that yet because they haven't played a full game without Nerland Knowles. But the expectation, as it would be for any team, is when you lose your best player, you're not going to be as good. They will have a chance, though, to prove that they can still play tournament-quality basketball. Well, actually, really, they haven't proved yet that they can play tournament-quality basketball. But they have a schedule with Florida and Missouri at home, so they're going to have chances to get the kind of quality wins that they need to get into the tournament. If they don't get any quality wins from here on out, they're not going to make it.
And one more thought on the SEC. A team like Alabama, they're 16-8. They're 0-2 against top 25 teams. Are they a bubble team, or are they definitely in?
I'm sorry, did you say Alabama?
Yeah, Alabama.
Oh, no, they're not. They're definitely out.
Oh, they're out then. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too late, but they've got 3 bad losses at home, plus a loss to Auburn. They haven't beaten a team that's a definite tournament team yet, and they've done most of their damage at home. So, I mean, unless Villanova makes a run and make that win look better for Alabama. I don't really see, you know, Alabama's got a lot of work to do before their tournament team.
Okay, another team that a lot of people are interested in, I'm jumping over to the Atlantic 10. Obviously, in this area, the Midwest, kind of a Cinderella team, a team that a lot of people just love to see their story unfold, Butler. They had a big loss at home, though, the other night against Charlotte. How much did that hurt them in their overall seeding?
Well, it hurts a little bit. There's no question about it. They were playing shorthanded. Their center, Andrew Smith, didn't play. He's their really other only legitimate big man. So that would be taken into some consideration. But they, you lose at home. Charlotte's not a bad team, but I think it's kind of a thing where that game helps Charlotte more than it hurts Butler.
Where would you seed Butler at this point, Jerry?
I've got him as a three.
Yeah, good. I wondered if they could hold a three, and so that sounds great. You got two other teams in that conference, Virginia Commonwealth and St. Louis. Obviously, the unfortunate incident with Rick Majerus. Coach Cruz has taken over there. Used to be at the University of Evansville, also a friend of mine. Where does St. Louis stack up in all this?
Well, they're in the bracket for now. They've done some nice things this year. It's not a sure thing for them. I've got them as an 11 seed. That home loss to Rhode Island really hurts, and they've beaten some teams that are good. I mean, they beat Butler, of course, and they beat New Mexico, which is nice, but both of those were at home. So for St. Louis, I think the thing that they have left to do is, well, first of all, avoid bad losses, but also, you know, beat a tournament-quality team away from home. And they do have a game at Butler on the schedule here in a couple of weeks, so they'll have that chance. But before that, they have Charlotte and VCU at home. So, you know, three tough games in a row for St. Louis coming up.
Yeah, and Gonzaga, another team that people just around the country enjoy watching their story unfold each year. Some people are saying if they can win out, they had a big win against St. Mary's. If they can win out, they could be as high as a two seed. Do you see that?
They could be as high as a one seed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, why not? If they win out and if they continue to dominate the way they have in that league, they've got some nice wins outside the league. In fact, they're 5-0 against the Big 12. And they played four bracket teams out of those five. So that's not just, you know, bottom feeders that they're playing.
Yeah.
They've done a really nice job this year. I think that Gonzaga would deserve some consideration as a one, depending on what else happens.
And you know, Mark Few's group will go and play anybody anywhere. So that helps the fact that they're not, you know, weak systems.
They have to because they know
they're
not going to get. Yeah, they know they're not going to get the kind of help they need in their league.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the Big East: Syracuse, Georgetown, Marquette, Louisville, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh, Connecticut, Cincinnati. Am I recognizing the teams that would be in at this point?
Notre Dame? Did you say Notre Dame?
Yes, Notre Dame.
Yeah,
and then
I would
St.
say
St. John's probably doesn't make it.
No, St. John's is on the outside.
Yeah, yeah. And Notre Dame with three wins against top 25 teams, do you have them in the top five or six seeds or below?
In terms of seeding?
Yeah.
They're in I think they're six.
Okay, six seeds.
I want to say they're six.
Pretty close. Is there anybody in there that you think listeners would be surprised about where they're
in the
at
bracket?
In the seed, either way low or way high?
Well, my email would seem to indicate that Memphis fans are not just surprised but upset that I only have them as an eight. They think they should be a number one, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, for a team that hasn't beaten anybody all year long, despite a gaudy record, they're really just more lucky to be in the bracket.
I love that. Jerry, you just have that great way of coming in this. Your tone just sells it immediately. Memphis fans, you're wishing way higher than what you should be. What about the rest of that conference? Is there anybody in the conference behind Memphis that you look at in the tournament, or are they just going to have to battle their way to try to get in?
Yeah, I mean, it's Memphis. Memphis is the only at-large quality team and barely in that entire league. And that's why it's hard for Memphis to build a resume, because they didn't do much at all. In fact, they played three good teams outside the league and lost to all of them. So, you know, they don't have a win over a team that looks like a tournament team at this point. And without that, I mean, it's really just hard to build much of a resume.
Now, Kansas, if we go out to the Big 12, Kansas obviously stubbed their toe a little bit, and it came back with a pretty strong win against Kansas State. You got Kansas State running second in that conference, 19-5. They had a nice run there, but it seems like against the top 25 teams, they've struggled. They're 2-4. How do you look at Kansas State as far as a seed coming out of the Big 12?
Yeah, I've got them as a four. You know, they did beat Florida. I mean, it's not they don't really have any bad losses. They've got some nice wins. They've done some of it away from home. I think they're clearly the number two team in the Big 12 at this point. And we'll see what happens going forward. But I think I like them as a four at this point. They're my lowest four, so they could be a five. But right now, I'd say they're a four.
How about Lon Kruger's Oklahoma team?
Yeah, they're in the bracket, somewhat in the middle. I've got them as a seven seed at the moment. They're having a really nice year. I mean, it's their first good year in a few years now, so it's nice to see them come back around.
So looking at the rest of the Big 12, obviously West Virginia doesn't have what it takes this year. Is both Baylor and Iowa State considered tournament worthy?
Yeah, right on the I have Iowa State in one of the play-in games, and Butler Baylor just outside of that group.
Okay, and I guess with recent victories, and I'm sorry I'm jumping around, but you go back to Big Ten, with recent victories, Illinois has had to help itself.
Yeah, they've gotten hot at a good time. The win over Indiana was just enormous for them, kept them from falling to 2-8 in the league. Then they go up to win at Minnesota, which is big, and then now they pounded Purdue the other day, so now they're up to 3 in a row, and it's a very streaky team. So they could go the other way just as quickly, because that's the nature of Illinois. But so far it's a good streak, and they need to stay on it really.
Okay, last couple things. In the Missouri Valley, you've got Creighton and Wichita State. Both have been ranked at different times in the year, but both have stubbed their toe as well. They're at the top of the conference. I think they both got 20 wins right now. Is it going to be one team out of the Missouri Valley, or is Creighton and Wichita State both in your brackets at this point?
Well, they both are right now, and you can't rule out Indiana State down the road. Is having a really good year, at least in terms of some of their better wins. They've had some problems, with some of the lesser teams on their schedule. That they've struggled with that those teams, but they've got some really good wins this year, including one over Miami. So, you know, if Indiana State can just find some consistency, they've got a chance to get into the tournament too.
Yeah, and I've got to give Indiana State credit. Versus top 25, they're 2-4, but they have played six teams at one time were in the top 25. So you got to give them credit for their schedule. How about Belmont? You know, a lot of people talked about Belmont. I think they've lost a couple games here as of late. Are they in, or they got to do something
to win
their conference
tournament
to stay?
They got to win their conference tournament, and that's always been the case. They're not a team that did anything of any significance outside the league where you'd think they'd have a shot at an at-large.
Yeah, so they'll battle with Murray State and maybe another team or two in there to try to find their way in the tournament.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I know that things are just going to keep jumping around and changing. I was glad to see Minnesota step up in the Big Ten a little bit and get a big win over Wisconsin. But I would assume that helps Minnesota and Wisconsin. They're probably in at this point.
Yeah, Minnesota and Wisconsin. Oh, yeah, there's seven Big Ten teams that are well into the bracket. Nobody's really on the bubble at this point.
Okay, that's what I thought. Well, Jerry, thanks for coming on and talking to us. People are getting excited about the run to the Final Four, and so much is a part of this is where people are going to get seated and how they're going to come out. And we just appreciate you coming on and spending time with us.
I'm glad to do it. Thanks.
Well, Jerry, you can follow Jerry at JP Palm CBS on Twitter. He's on there a lot, folks, and you can ask him all kinds of questions. We'll be back in a moment with our next segment. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Tomorrow, after the game, I, Jackie Moon, will wrestle a bear.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-9600. 6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and you guys were enlightened by the bracketologist extraordinaire there, Coach K. He does a great job, doesn't he?
He was great, Joe, and the thing that people need to understand, our listeners need to realize, he is constantly putting this information, running it through the computers and looking at everything to find out who fits where, and it's a changing thing day by day. Every game that gets played changes that group of 64 or 66 play-in, you know, the play-in games, but playing against top 25 teams, their wins, who played somebody and got beat by them, then affects someone who played that team and beat that team. So it's just constantly going on. And I know up at the NCAA headquarters in Indy, they're having mock selections right now, just seeing how things would come out. But I think one thing he confirmed for me and people in the Midwest who are Big Ten people is when you look at the Big Ten Conference, Joe, it's pretty safe to say that it cuts off right at, you know, Purdue's at the on the other end of the cutoff. And I'm not saying that because I'm an IU fan. I'm just saying if you look at the conference,
right,
it's today, you're going to see Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota. You're going to see those teams in, as he said. And then the SEC gets a little troubling. We may only see three teams out of the SEC, maybe four at the most.
Well, that's what they deserve. And, you know, Jerry's credibility even goes higher when you realize that he is a Purdue graduate. So, and I'll tell you what, speaking of Purdue, I have a question. I have a question from Tim in Jasper. Asked, Coach K, did you see Matt Painter get thrown out of the game? Do you feel like he was frustrated with the officials or frustrated with his team?
I think that Matt Painter, I did see him get kicked out, and fortunately had a short walk to their dressing room, and they even mentioned that on the Big Ten Network. I think there were three things there to answer the question. A lot of times coaches do things with an end result in mind. It looks like they're upset. I think he was frustrated with the officials, but I think he's frustrated with his team, and I think he was hoping to light a fire under his team by getting out there and being willing to stand up for him and be in a position where he might be ejected and hoping that might fire his team up a little bit. I don't think it worked a whole lot, but I think Purdue is just exactly what we've talked about all year, Joe, and I know it's disappointing for you. And you know what, folks? In a way, it's disappointing for me because I respect Coach Painter and I respect Purdue basketball, period. It's just frustrating because they just have kind of lost that confidence that you need to play basketball, especially in the Big Ten.
They haven't bought into it. I actually, I've taken some grief because, you know, they have that defense lives here sign, and I really think that they should take that down this year as a sign that start playing harder or we're not going to keep this sign up. It doesn't live here anymore. Because usually it used to be when you played a Purdue team, they may not have had the greatest offensive team, but you always knew that you were going to have to work your behind off the score, and I really don't think that. Maybe it's youth, I don't know, or maybe it's people just, some of the people haven't bought into the system, I don't know. But reading a Golden Black chat room the other day, there are rumors that Purdue people are always really big into talking about creening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think they're going to have any room to talk at the end of this season. I think there's going to be some wholesale changes, from what I gather, at the end of the year.
Well, I think that Coach Painter and his staff are going to have to do some things, and I think Coach Painter has to look not just at his roster, but he's got to look at his staff too. Do we have a staff assembled that can accomplish the ultimate goal, and that is to win a national championship? And I would think that if Coach Painter was thinking anything else than a national championship, that wouldn't be the guy that I know, and that isn't the guy that Purdue wants. But he might have to look at some of his staff and say, are we recruiting the way we need to? Are we able to recruit the way we need to? You know, they did such a good job during Gene Katie's period on a consistent basis. Maybe towards the end they, they got a little lax. But, you know, Frank Kendrick, I know he got in a little trouble, but those guys did a great job of getting out there and selling Purdue to people, and they may have to look at that. But, you know, as much as Purdue is disappointed, lacks leadership on the floor as a young team, they will be a good team before they're done. An area resident, grew up, played for Harrison High School, was at U of E for a little bit, Brad Brunell. He's out at Clemson. People might remember that name. He was at Wright State before that, and he's done a great job as a head coach on the D1 level. He's got a really young team, and he plays in a tough, tough conference, and they're around 500. Now, I'm sure he's catching a little bit of flack too, but he has two seniors on the team, and the rest are sophomores and freshmen. So you look at a lot of that stuff, and you got to at least look at the roster and say, what we're not getting done today, we have a chance to get done the next couple years. And I know for fans that's tough, and believe me, for players and coaches it's tough in the present. But you've got to keep your eye on where you're going, and not just where you're at. And I know that sounds like coach jargon and prosperity talk, but I mean, I believe that you got to keep your eye on where you want to go, where you think you're going to get to, and not always just where you're at. And these guys are young. Think about Kentucky right now, starting to play well. They go in and play Florida and get trounced. They lose probably what was considered the number one pick in the upcoming NBA draft. And I know, hey, I know right now some of you are saying, he's not ready for the NBA. They don't pick people that are necessarily ready that day for the NBA. They pick people who they believe will be above and exceed being ready for the NBA. And Nerland Knowles is one of those guys. So Kentucky fans, you know, they're hanging their heads right now. Purdue fans are hanging their heads. Evansville Aces fans are kind of hanging their heads as the Aces have hit a little bit of a drought after a pretty good start to the conference season. Ohio State, look at Ohio State, folks. Joe, did you know that Ohio State doesn't have a win against a top 25 team this year?
No, I didn't know that, but I watched that game last night, and they were lucky at home to get away from with a win over the Northwestern Wildcats. It was close.
Yeah, and that's a team that a lot of people want to be good. But, you know, their best player, Thomas, he's what I call kind of a receiver. He doesn't really make the players around him better. He receives the ball, and he can score. He's an outstanding player, but he doesn't help make the guys around him. Aaron Kraft, a great defender, not bad offensively, but they just don't have enough weapons. So Indiana is held their number one, and I think if you looked on our Facebook page and Twitter, I had mentioned that maybe the pollsters are too tough on a team when they lose and want to move them out so quickly, and that didn't happen this time around. Indiana came back, got a win against Ohio State, and maintained their number one ranking. And we're going to go to commercial, and we're going to come back, and we've got Ryan Ernie, the coach of the Jasper Wildcat. Lady Cats, they'll be playing in the regional this weekend. Joe, aren't they playing against one of your old towns that you lived in?
I never lived in Rushville. That was my father's place he grew up. And my sophomore year, we were actually asked to move back to Rushville with 3D, and fortunately, he said no.
Yeah, well, Rushville is a great community, and they have a great tradition, especially in girls basketball. And we'll talk more hoops when we come back with Ryan Ernie. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
We are going to do what we set out to do. We're going to win that tournament.
Yes! I knew it. I knew you were a champion the minute I saw you bowl, Ish.
I'm not going to bowl. You are.
You are such a loser. You're a bona fide schmuck. Look at me!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're with Jasper Head Girls Basketball Coach Ryan Ernie. Ryan, I have a question. I was at the game Tuesday night. Shelby drilled the half-quarter. Does she have the green light after she crosses the half-court line tomorrow, or what?
Well, we're going to let her get a little closer to the basket. We reviewed the tape, and Coach Lesko videotaped, and her foot was actually on the line. So he said it didn't count. You know, it didn't count because it had to be on the other side of half court. But, you know, what a special player for us. She's just done an outstanding job of leading our basketball team this year.
Well, Ryan, I'm so excited for you, obviously, being a former player for me and just the wonderful job you've done with the program. Another sectional championship. I know they're never easy. You had to blend a team that had an outstanding player in Shelby Murder, but you had to blend her with a lot of youth against a very good schedule. You had your moments this year where you played well. You had your moments where you stubbed your toe. You had your moments where you didn't get the outcome you wanted, but maybe you got some of the play you wanted. You have to feel good about how they came together, stayed focused, and that's the key, stayed focused and confident to move along and get to the point where they can play in the regional tournament.
Well, Coach, you're exactly right. And you know, you've been through it. And, you know, and the thing that we told our kids, you know the everybody else, the fans, they look at the win-loss record. And obviously, as a competitor, you want to win every basketball game that you're a part of. But that's just not the reality. And the thing that we try to stress to our kids is, are we getting better? You know, every night out, did we get better? Did we learn something? You know, the tournament is where it matters. You know, the sectional and getting into the regional and all those games you play, you use those opportunities, those things that have occurred to help prepare you for the tournament. And I thought our kids, you know, bought into that in the sectional. We never panicked. You know, we were down at halftime of each of those games. All three games we were down at halftime. And when we went to the locker room, you didn't see anybody panicking. It was just, this is what we've got to do. They know their job. And we went out and we executed. And that came from a lot of, you know, repetition in the regular season and different scenarios that we were placed in during the regular season. So it's, you know, that's what the regular season's for, is to prepare you for the tournament.
And, you know, people, for our listeners, and so, you know, we have listeners who love all the different sports and are very knowledgeable of the game, and some who have played and some who haven't. But I mean, it really is the difference of a defensive possession, a missed shot, or as I always believed in, and I know you do, hitting your free throws. And you're not even preparing to play this weekend if you don't hit your free throws first night out.
You're right. You're exactly right. And that's, you know, there's so many little things that can happen in a game, and whether it's defensive rebounding and free throws. And we stress, you know, free throws in that Washington game. We hit enough of them at a high clip, and that's so important. It's something that we focus on every day. And, you know, our kids often wonder, you know, why are we shooting free throws after we're tired, or why are we sprinting back and forth after we miss a free throw? And, you know, in a game, you get winded, and you got to be able to shoot free throws tired, and we shoot pressure free throws, and to try to put those in that position. And, you know, a lot of little things, and that's something we always preach, you know, our staff, is it's the little things add up to make the big things. And, you know, that's what it takes to climb that ladder, is taking care of the little things.
And Coach, that's why you're successful, and I'm not in any way patronizing you. You just said what is the difference between successful programs and coaches. And I'm not talking, you know, everybody has a year where the personnel level is down a little bit, things don't go right, and it doesn't end up the way you want. But when you look at the body of work, such as what you've done and coaches I've grown up around and worked against and have been involved with, if you're not doing the little things, if you're not preaching the little things, if you're not continuing to do the things that your girls or a boys team that they don't want to do at the end of practice or the middle of practice or on a Thursday practice, If you don't keep blocking out individually and as a team, doing the layups, working on that handling drill, when to cross over, when the defender's around you, all those little things, you're not going to get a chance to play in the regional. You're not going to get a chance to play in a sectional final game. You're going to have trouble winning on Tuesdays or Thursday nights. And I see that all the time. People say, well, he was a really good player. Why isn't he succeeding as a coach in different things? And probably because they're not doing the little things. So I applaud you for that. And your girls are very fortunate. The Jasper program is very fortunate to have someone that sees that. It's the key. Now, you're going into the regional. You're playing a program that has a great tradition in girls basketball, Rushville. Tell us a little bit about your opponent. I know you can't go into the full scouting report, how you're going to do things, but tell us a little bit about Rushville.
Well, you know, they're 20-3 and ranked 7th in the state. And, you know, as we pulled in, we talked to the Brownstown athletic director, you know, they're expecting to win. You know, they're bringing 1,000 fans. You know, they are a solid basketball team. They're physical. You know, our big concern is going to be, can we match their physicality and keep them off the boards? You know, we ended up with about 6 or 7 tape, spent the week watching them on film. They are probably the best offensive rebounding team that we will have seen this year. You know, that's a concern. You know, that is such a vital part of the game. And, you know, and they're big, 5'11", 5'11", 5'10", wow. And they're strong. You know, so they've got some size and strength, you know, and so we've been talking to, you know, our kids that it's going to take a team effort of rebounding. We can't just rely on Shelby and Tori. You know, we're going to be without Brooke Leakin, who's, you know, one of our stronger kids down in the post. She's going to be out with a torn meniscus. So, you know, we've got the kind of the deck stacked against us. And, you know, we talked about that junkyard dog mentality that we've got to get in there and fight and scratch. And, you know, one possession we saw, they had 6 offensive rebounds. So, you know, they've got a really nice player in the Campbell kid that can shoot it, take you off the dribble. This is a solid basketball team, a great program. We played them a couple of years ago up at Notre Dame basketball camp. I think that was the year they played in the Hall of Fame Classic. Coach Marlowe does an outstanding job with them. So it should be a fun time. And, you know, we've prepared and you know, just got to go out and execute and match their intensity.
Now, Coach, you know, you talked about how you got you're down one player, but you were also down one player at sectional. Tori was somewhat hurt. Who are some of the players that stepped up in her absence last week, and who are some of the players you're expecting to step up in the absence of Leakin?
Well, you know, Elizabeth Albrand just had an absolute coming out party this week, you know, in the sectionals. You know, she was kind of one of those swing players, playing a little JV, playing some varsity, getting a few minutes here and there, and just blossomed. She rebounds well. You know, she's getting more confidence in her scoring. She can guard multiple positions. Nicolette Eckert's another kid, a freshman, about 5'3", and she's not afraid of anything or anybody. She'll get knocked down to the floor and pop right back up. Just a strong kid. You know, Alex Croft is going to have to help us. You know, she got in the sectional final game, probably woke up that morning thinking, you know, I'm not going to get in. It's just going to be, I'm going to be on the bench cheering. And we had to go to her. We had foul trouble. Brooke was out. You know, Tori had limited minutes. And she went in and did a great job, scored 2 points and played good defense, had a couple rebounds. And that's what we need out of the bench. And we prepare those kids at practice. You know, some of those kids get to go up against the varsity every day, which makes them better. You know, and then we're going to need, obviously, we're going to need a lot out of Shelby. You know, she's our leader on the floor. You know, she's going to Ball State. We're going to need her to score. And we talked that they're going to try to be physical with her, and she's going to have to deal with that and handle that. You know, Maddie Ubelor is another kid that's going to have to play well for us. Tori's finally back to full strength. So I think that, you know, playing without, you know, she was on crutches for 2 days, so we weren't even going to allow her to, you know, she wasn't even allowed to practice. So that's tough when you kind of get out of that rhythm. So she's back in rhythm. So she's going to be an important piece for us in terms of rebounding and defensive help. You know, so just it's going to be a team effort. And that's the one thing about these kids all year long. It's been a team effort, and that's probably one of the most things I'm proud of about our team is how they stick together and fight through that adversity.
Yeah, I think it speaks well for Shelby as a leader on the floor, and the young people are buying in. You know, you talk about waking up and maybe not thinking they were going to do anything but cheer off the bench. It's so important throughout the year, and especially at tournament time. If you've been picked to put on that uniform during tournament time, man, you should be replaying moments in that of the game. You should play moments of the future games in your mind, if you got in, where you might be, because you never know when your coaches, your staff, or any staff looks at each other and says, you know what, we're going to give this gal a shot, or this is where she can excel. And, you know, the All-Brand girl being, you know, Susan and Brad, great athletic background that she's coming from, and just your whole group in general, I think has just come together in such a way that they become such a competitive team that it's no longer freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. It's the Jasper Lady Wildcats basketball team.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, they just, you know, there's, you know, and that goes back to what we talked about earlier with those battles during the regular season. You know, we lost some of those close games, but why did we lose them? We went back and were able to point out to kids, you know, if we do this, this, and this, we have a different outcome in this game. And you learn along the way. And, you know, we got kids on the bench, and I'll walk down the end of the bench in the middle of a game and say, hey, look at what's going on here. You know, see how Shelby's playing this person. You know, what's the people that you might be going in for? Because you never know. And that's the thing. You never know. Somebody could get hurt. You know, last year we were up here, Shelby went down in the morning game right before halftime. And we had to have some kids step up, and we rode that emotion of how well we played, and we got to the final game, just ran out of steam against Madison. And, you know, you've got to always be ready because you just never know what's going to happen. So that's the mantra that we always preach to our kids, is just to be ready at all times.
Hey, and I got to correct myself, Ryan. I said Brad Albrand. It's Jason Albrand. I don't want Susan to think she, you know, I'm confused on either one's. They were outstanding athletes at Jasper, but that Jason and Susan's daughter. Hey, Ryan, let me ask you a question. When you came into that sectional round and you got through, was there, and you've talked about some of the girls that have stepped up, but as you went into the tournament period, did you and your coaching staff sit down and talk about maybe some of those girls, players, who you felt like this could be their opportunity to step up and do something that maybe you didn't think they've done all year?
You do. You know, we've had discussions, as the season's gone on, we're evaluating kids, what are we going to get out of Elizabeth? We're going to have her four quarters. You know, what role are we going to use her in? You know, we want to put her out there where she can be successful in certain spots. And, you know, when you're playing with, you know, JV kids and, you know, and all of a sudden you're playing with varsity kids, you're going to look a little bit better when you're playing with, you know, the Shelby Murders and Madison Ublors and Allison Lenses of the world. You know, those kids will make you look better. And that's the thing that, you know, you could see their growth throughout the year, just progress. You know, Elizabeth played nothing but freshman ball last year and slowly became, you know, we're throwing her in the varsity in the first game of the year. You know, so that's kind of a big jump for her. And she really grew as a basketball player. You know, same way with Nicolette, is trying to put these kids in spots where they're going to be successful and taste that success and get a little confidence going.
Well, if you get through this first game against Rushville, and I believe you do because I just believe in Ryan Ernie and his Lady Wildcats, who's the potential foe in the final?
Well, you've got Evansville Bossy and Cordon Central. You know, if I had to pick, which – we've seen both of them on tape. Bossy is a little quicker. They like to press. Cordon, a little bit more deliberate, a little more zone type of team, can shoot the ball really well. Should be a pretty good matchup. As coaches, we've prepared. We've got, obviously, Rushville covered. That's the game that we've got to get through. You got to win the first one before you can get to the second one. But we've got tape and we've got scouting reports on the other two as well. And that's just making sure you're prepared for all scenarios, and you never know who you're going to play. And, you know, this is the fourth time we've been here, and each time as a coach and a coaching staff, we've learned a little bit more in terms of routine, in terms of getting tape and preparing for that second game as well as the first game. So it's been a good experience for us as well.
Yeah, experience makes all the difference, Coach, and I know you know that. I know when I was coaching, it made a big difference, especially when you get it to semi-state level and they have TV timeouts and things like that. You just, if you've never been through it, it's difficult for everybody to process, and now you've got that experience, and you can help your players along with that. I did see a picture in the local paper, in the Herald, and it looked like Coach Dave Lesko, who I've known for years and years and years. I hope he wasn't doing some kind of dance in the locker room after the victory. It was a strange picture. Are you keeping him under control?
He was doing a dance. He was doing I think he came in and did a Kung Fu Panda dance or something. That's what's great about our staff. You know, they have fun, but I couldn't ask for a better staff. And you know, the scouting and the preparation that they put in, and just being with the kids and working with them and staying extra after practice, you know, that's why we are where we are, is because of those guys as well.
Well, it's exciting time for you, Coach, and we're excited for you. I know Janet and I are always watching your scores, and we're proud of your success. And we wish you so much luck and success this weekend. Ask for blessings upon you and your team, and hopefully we'll be talking to you next week about a semi-state.
I hope so. That would be fantastic. We appreciate the blessings. Any help we can get, you know, the fans, you guys thinking about us, that means a lot to us.
Well, thanks for being with us, Ryan. Good luck. As we go to break, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Quarterback, go ahead.
Me? Or, yeah, shouldn't we, like, learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or...
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
Oh! Oh. Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Arca Driver, Jasper High School Class of 81 classmate of Coach K and Joe, Bo Lamastis. Bo, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. Joe, I'm good. Good, good. And you all?
So we're doing great. We're doing great, especially when we get to talk to a fellow classmate of ours. You know,
too good to finally hear from you, man. How long's it been?
It's been a while, you know. But you know, you can listen every Friday. You can hear Coach K and Joe. Just got to tune in and call in whenever you want, and you'll
well,
want to talk to us.
And I've got to be honest. The other day when we first this idea came up, I went and clicked on you guys' shows, which I have to compliment you and Kenny. It's too cool. I mean, I sit there and I listened, and you guys were arguing back and forth, and which was kind of typical. I think anybody that ever talked to Kenny, in a way, kind of went back and forth. But it was just excellent. So first off, good stuff. Your show is too neat. I can't believe you can sit there and talk about basketball all that time. So what I did,
did you actually get to hear me talk?
You know, I didn't get to hear you say much, which was, again, that's typical with Kenny Schulteis. Nobody else really got to talk, see? So.
Yeah, and we don't pay him by the word, which is a great thing, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Otherwise,
cool.
It'd be bad. But, you know, cool. We found out a couple weeks ago that our good friend Jimbo Lamastis is entering the world of ARCA racing. And, Bo, how did you come to decide to join the ranks of the ARCA crew?
Oh gosh. Well, I've been doing some car racing here the last 4 or 5 years, and the car racing that I have done quite a bit of is all road race, road courses. So we were doing a deal up at Road America up in Wisconsin. Anyway, there was an opportunity to get a hold of a an ARCA ride for this year up there. And we, when I say we, just myself and my team, we looked at it and said, oh, hell, let's give that a try. That would be great. You know, typically I'm racing in these Hondas, and then I run something called Spec Miata. And those groups would be like SCCA is the primary group that I run with. But we looked at this Road America deal, and we said, what the heck, we'll do it. And as I was putting that together, there was a group, there was a team down in Atlanta, Gibson, Mark Gibson Racing. Anyway, they were kind of at a crossroads to where they didn't know if they were going to go forward. So we started talking to those guys and ended up buying their team as far as all their equipment and whatnot goes. So at that point, we had our own cars. We had everything we would need to go racing. But one of the guys said, you know what, let's go down to Daytona and do a test. And we did that back in December. So what started out to run three road courses in an ARCA series quickly expanded to doing all the races. So anyway, long story short, just typical of a lot of things we do. It just kind of expands as you get into it. And, you know, the ARCA League and the ARCA people, they're great. So it's a good fit. And, you know, we're here. We're rookies. I'm a rookie at this thing. You know, today we had a good run. We had what was supposed to be, I think, a three-hour practice session ended up getting rained out maybe after an hour or so. So we got some track time, which was great. I mean, I'm dying to get all the track time I can get just simply because I don't have enough experience at this type of racing and certainly this type of facility. And you get out there on something like this today, it's a dandy. I mean, it's you know, it's a lot of racetrack you got to deal with. And yeah, I mean, so it's all good.
You know, yeah, I mean, when you think of racing, you think of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you think of Daytona. I mean, you know, it's pretty awesome to have a friend that's going to be racing on one of the most historic racetracks in all of America. And you know, tell us how it is to be in one of these cars on Daytona Speedway.
Oh gosh, I mean, you know, there's so much banking here, right? I mean, everything that you kind of see on TV as far as what the banking looks like, I would say from a driver's seat, it's even more intense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a tri-oval, so it's not like an Indianapolis to where it's, you know, all four corners are basically the same. That's different here. But, you know, you certainly in these type of cars, any of the NASCAR stuff you'll be seeing over the next week or so down here, you never lift. Essentially, once you get out and get up to speed, you can never lift off the accelerator. You got to keep it to the floor. And that was something that took me a little bit of getting used to back in December when we were down here testing. And what that amounts to is this is called a restrictor plate track. So everybody, whether you're Jeff Gordon or Tony Stewart, everybody here, you're running a restrictor plate. And what that amounts to, what that means is you're not allowed to use all the horsepower that your engine actually has. And the reason they do that is just to keep the speeds, you know, somewhere down around a manageable range. So a restrictor plate is between the carburetor and the engine. Basically, it acts almost like to choke it off. So everybody's wanting bigger holes in their plates, and of course you can't modify it. Once it is set in there by the ARCA, by the NASCAR guys during tech, you can't touch anything. So a good example would be today. We wanted more. You know, you wanted more speed. We seemed to be, you know, we're a good half second off where we need to be, where we were hoping to be. You know, today I think at one point we were probably around 12th quickest. And, you know, that's not really where you want to be if tomorrow's qualifying. So we don't have any more track time. In other words, you will not touch that car. You'll take it through final tech, but you won't get to touch the car. You won't get to do anything. And then at 2 o'clock, we drew slot number 41. So I think there's roughly 48 or 49 teams here. So that's it. You're gonna get two laps qualifying, and then the field is set. You know, and obviously you hope you're gonna be in the top, because the field will be a 40-man field. So in essence, tomorrow, you know, you first off, you got to make sure you've got the speed to make the field, but we will. Barring any type of issue, but we should be fine there. But obviously, you want to be as far up front as you can be, because in this type of racing, you know, there's trouble anywhere, but there's always trouble in back.
Yeah.
So I was just saying, there's such a wide gap in an ARCA field if you really look at it. I mean, we've got rookies. Oh, the other day in the rookie meeting, you know, there were guys sitting there that were 19, 20 years old, and I'm not the oldest guy in the field. Hell, I'm not that old. But at 50, I was certainly the oldest rookie. I don't think there was anybody in there that was older than 25. So you've got a lot of rookies in here. So there's just a wide range of driver skill sets. And the best thing you can do is just stay away from it. And one of the best ways to do that is just, you know, don't be in back. Because usually in back is where the problems are. So anyway, we have a little bit of a plan anyway.
Now, you know, ever since the Dale Earnhardt incident, safety has become such a major part of racing, and I'm sure you're strapped in there like a sardine, and you know, you and I talked a little bit about how important your spotters are. You know, give our listeners, a view of, you know, what they mean to you while you're in the car.
They mean everything. So what you've got would be two spotters. So one on the west side, right on top of the press box. Other side of the track would be your other spotter. I was fortunate enough to hook up with Jeff Bodine. So Jeff Bodine, for the whole season, will be acting as, you know, primarily as your coach. But Bodine's also a great spotter. So Jeff Bodine's job, for me, is basically he's been in this thing enough times. He won the Daytona 500, so he's got a ton of experience. So Bodine is on one side of the track, and his whole focus, his whole job, is more or less to be down the track from me, looking out. And then I've got another spotter who's Chad Sims. So his job is basically just to watch your every movement as far as, hey, you know, you need to move up high, you need to move down low. When you're passing somebody, your spotter tells you when you're clear. And what that means is you don't want to move back down until your spotter tells you you're clear. You know, when you're in the car, you can't see much. And I know some people think, well, what do you mean you can't see much? You don't have a big range of motion like you're used to. You can't look far to the left and you can't look far to the right because, you know, you're wearing something called a Hans device, and that kind of holds your head. It prevents your head from doing like a whiplash forward. And, you know, back in the day, that's really what hurt Dale Earnhardt. That's what caught him out was, I think, his, you know, that was before a Hans device was there. So all this stuff is, you know, all these improvements and safety features, they're there for a reason. When you're in the car, you feel pretty secure. You really, really do. You know, it's a comfortable deal. You you try and make your cockpit, because it's however you want to make it. So we started working on our seats back in maybe December. As soon as we left here from that test, I mean, we tested for like 3 days back in December, and you know, there were certain things that that made you uncomfortable. Like on long runs, we would be out there for maybe a half an hour, which isn't long, but so you would sit there and think, yeah, that seat, you know, I wish it did this, or I wish it had this or that. So you just kind of, I don't know, over the last month, you've made that cockpit very much the way you want it to be, because you're going to be in that car for 2 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want it to be as comfortable as it can be, and you want it obviously to be as safe as it can be. So then, like, ARCA sets forth the rules. Here's exactly what that cockpit seat needs to be. Here's how that seat needs to be certified. And then 2-3 days ago, when you first show up here, they start going through your car, making sure all that stuff is stamped and all the regulations are met. And they're doing all that for, you know, they're doing all that for the right reason. They're doing it basically to keep the thing as safe as they possibly can. Yet at the end of the day, it drives the cost up in racing, because you're constantly buying these new seats and buying all these new belts and straps, because they're all dated, and they'll only let you use a seat for maybe a year and a half to 2 years. And then you think, well, hell, that seat's perfectly fine, but it's basically done. It's what's called timed out. So you've got to take that seat out and start with a new one. So anyway, just a lot of little stuff that's, at the end of the day, it's expensive, but it's meant to keep you safe, and that's what you pay these guys for. So anyway,
now you know you're racing at Daytona this week. Give us a little info about that race. What do you go from here until race day?
Well,
what all do you have to do?
We've got, you know, tomorrow's qualifying, so tomorrow's a pretty easy. Tomorrow's a simple day, right? You qualify, you're out there by yourself. Essentially, you know just exactly what to do in reference to the line you want to run. So you get your car fully spooled up. You get one, what's called the outlap, which means that's where you came out of the pits. And then the first lap out really is just about getting yourself fully up to speed. You're going to come past the start-finish line, and that would be lap number two, and that's where you know exactly where you want to go. You know, you want to, between, you're going into turn one, you're going to be about midline. And then when you come out of turn two, you really try and get what's called a run off the banking, and then that sets you back the back stretch. And then the same thing in three, you're going to go pretty high, and hopefully that'll slingshot you all the way around and take you across the finish line. So the whole thing about qualifying is, you know, you try and use everything that the track would give you in relationship to producing a good time. And if you said, well, shit, in the race, why wouldn't you use that exact same line? Well, because you got traffic. You know, in the race, you got somebody to the left, somebody to the right, whereas tomorrow it's just you. So you can kind of basically use up the whole track in relationship to the fastest way around. So hopefully we'll find a good groove. And, you know, the goal, we're going to try and be in the top 10. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Once you get out there, you know what the line you're going to use, you already know what that's going to be. And at that point, it's really a crapshoot. You know, you get out there and you'll come in and see what the board says. And you get what you get, and that's how you're going to be lined up for Saturday.
Now, just to let the listeners know, your race is on Speed Channel, right?
Yep. Heck yeah, it is on. So it's on Speed, and I want to say it starts at 4:30, although maybe Speed starts before that, but I know for sure. So it's kind of good. There are 10 races this year in our schedule that are live. So obviously I think Daytona is the biggest one, you know, within the whole series. So that's kind of good. Not everybody gets Speed Channel, but it's Speed was just taken over by Fox, so that'll help bring it to a lot of additional households down the road. So
I was talking to Jim Skillman today. He's down in Daytona, and he told me you had some stuff with Speed Channel today. Will we see? Was that for the race, or will we see anything before the race in the days coming up? Or will there be any ARCA stuff on?
I don't know, to be honest. I did a I did something with Speed. It was like a little interview, but they didn't say. I have no idea if it is something they're going to use, or did they just take a bunch of these. Who knows? You never know. You know, I've kind of never met a camera I didn't like, so it was it was all, you know, but I don't know. They'll do something tomorrow with qualifying, but qualifying is not going to be shown in its entirety, I don't think. In fact, I'm sure it's not, but they'll do something. So all the more reason you want to be up front. And I think Saturday, in fact, I know we're going to have an in-car camera. So that's part of Speed. So that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You know, our whole brand, what I do, or, you know, my company is called Crosley Radio, and kind of, we're in the electronics business, but we do vintage electronics. So we make everything from turntables to radios to jukeboxes to payphones, and it all looks like it came from, I don't know, 30s, 40s, 50s. It depends on what the product is. So all in all, you know, a lot of folks ask you, you know, so tell me a little bit about how racing, you know, how's that exposure going to help you move more turntables? So, I don't know. I look at it, the more eyeballs we can get on the brand and the more people we can get to take a look at Crosley, obviously it's all positive. And so, you know, to do something to like an in-car camera, when you sit and you talk to the guys at Speed about doing that type of thing, you go back and forth. And, you know, in my shoes from the Crosley side, you know, you sit and say, okay, well, it's hitting this many households and blah, blah, blah. That's kind of a cool thing. And then there's, you know, there's certain guys that look at that and they think, you know, it just doesn't necessarily correlate to what they're trying to achieve. But on our side, you know, I try, and I've always tried to tie as much of my racing into the business as I can. Yet, obviously, being in vintage electronics doesn't exactly correlate with racing motorcycles or running cars around Daytona. But if you do it right and you put out the right type of program, it all ties together. We've got a couple partners that do work for us on the manufacturing side, and they're in Asia. So one of them is here. So they're a support arm. So they help a little bit, if you will. And so another group that we use that does all the ocean freight parts, they're involved a little bit. So, you know, from my angle, you just try and get as many supporters and as many people within your kind of your business arsenal that can benefit from being here. You just try and bring everybody together, have a good experience. And, you know, the flip side to that is it puts a little pressure on you. You know what I mean? In my shoes, you're a team owner. You're the guy backing the business. And then, oh, guess what? He's also the guy in the car. So it's all good, but it puts pressure on you in reference. You don't want to let anybody down. You know what I mean? You don't want to you don't want to cut the day short. You know, if you get into an accident that's, you know, of any sort, that's not good, because then everybody's supporting you. You know, everybody back home at Crosley, their day was cut short. You know what I mean? And or we didn't make the podium or what have you. So, you know, there's there's always a little bit of pressure to it. And, you know, that part you like from the intensity, but yet at the same time, you know, you take it really serious. You don't want, you know, you want everybody to feel like, wow, we really had a successful event, and it was viable, and it's something, you know, they want to stay attached to, you know, and obviously run the whole year, and hopefully we'll be running for several years. So, anyway.
Okay. Well, Bo, I'll tell you what, it's been great talking to you. You promised to come back throughout the season and keep our audience up to date on what's going on with Bo Lemastis, right?
I sure will. I sure will. Now, the only thing I would say that would totally bring me back, and I, obviously I'd be love to talk to you guys in any way, shape, or form, would be if Kenny Schultheis is involved.
Oh, he will be. I'm sure it's, you know, he must, his wife, you know, why he does whatever his wife says. So Janet must have cracked the whip.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know.
Exactly.
So,
yep. Makes all the sense in the world. Well, it's Valentine's Day, Joe. So you might be wanting to get home yourself, you know.
So exactly.
Yeah.
But hey,
yeah.
Bo, it's been nice talking to you, and please come back and good luck in the race. Okay.
Okay. Heck yeah. Yep. Many thanks.
Okay.
All righty. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
The boys basketball sectional draw is this Sunday. We'll be back to take a look at some of those sectionals with Coach K and Andy Eigel after these words from our sponsors. You have been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I gotta work on my game.
No, don't think of it as work. The whole point is just to enjoy yourself.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Coach K and Andy Eigel. But, Coach, before we get talking basketball, I do have to got a Facebook message from Jay Lori, and he says, and I quote, "Tell Bo good luck in the race, and tell Kenny to wake up Pubsy."
you got to love it. Old Jay Bird, he would... We're talking about John Lori, originally from Jasper with us, and we actually all went to USI for a year, John and Bo and Mark Carter and Luke Holes and myself, before I transferred out to IU with John and Pop, and then Bo went on to Western Kentucky, and it is good luck. You know, that's quite an accomplishment for him to be taking the time, making the effort. I knew he always loved racing, and we knew growing up he loved the motorcycles, but to be in the circuit with the car and those speeds and those racetracks are something, Joe. I know many of our listeners have seen him, but for the ones that haven't, when he talks about the banking of the racetrack, I mean, it is it's like a hill.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were standing on it, you'd be sliding down. I mean, you got to have great focus, dexterity, and you got to be nimble and ready. Hey, I also want to apologize again, Elizabeth Albrand, a member of the Wildcats. It's Susan and Jason Albrand, and I know that's what happens with live, with the live broadcast, live show. You make a mistake and you pay for it for a while, so... Susan, be kind to me. I know Jason will, but Susan, be kind to me.
Hey, we have one more comment before we get talking sectionals. Travis Madison says, Joe, let me know when you need someone to tell some good Coach K stories from the past.
Well, so. Travis can, and our next guest, who was an assistant for me at Washington Catholic, his brother Danny, who played for me for a year, can probably tell some great ones as well. As well as mimic me, Travis is the superintendent at Bar Eve School High School, our community schools, and Travis was an outstanding player. He's an outstanding administrator, and Joe, he actually does some analysis play-by-play on Bar Eve games, so we'll probably have him on to talk about the Bar Eve-Lagodi rivalry and the Lagodi sectional coming up as well. So, but that's what we're going to go into right now with former Eastern coach Andy Eichel, and great coach as during his time, and he's taken at least a year off. We'll see. He might get back in it, but we're going to talk North Knox sectional, which Eastern participates in, and the Lagodi sectional, which Andy had games for years with Lagodi, Bar Eve, North Davies, and those teams. So, Andy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Coach. It's always good to talk basketball this time of year.
Well, it is a great time of year. You know, we're going to have the IHSA draw coming up on Sunday for sectionals, and it's always an exciting time. I know we're a decade or more into the class basketball, but I can still remember the one class drawing period, and that was always pins and needles, but I'm sure it's the same for class basketball. And we've got two exciting sectionals that you're very familiar with, and that is the North Knox sectional up in Bicknell, and then the Lagodi sectional, obviously, in the traditional basketball town of Lagodi, Indiana. Let's start first with North Knox, and let's talk about some of the teams that are coming that will be in that sectional and how they're looking at this point in the year.
Well, I think you start with the Sullivan-Golden Arrows. Coach Jeff Moore's team is 17-3. They're 6-1 against their own sectional, and you know, they're all juniors. That's the scary part for the rest of this sectional in the future. But I think they stand out as a team that will be very, very difficult to beat. The team probably that would be picked second would be the Linton Miners. And don't get me wrong, they're no slouch either. They're 15-3 and 5-1 against the sectional. And they have probably two of the best players, if not the best players, in Des Fugeris and Austin Carazia. Both will look to play college basketball after their careers are over. And then third would probably be my Thunderbirds that went through a little mid-season rut, but they're now coming back to play some of their best basketball of the year. And they're 12-7 and 4-2 against the sectional field and have one of the best shooters. And I'm not just saying this because he's a T-Bird, but one of the best shooters I've seen around all year, and that's 6'2 senior Tyler Bruff that can fill it up from anywhere. And then, you know, you can't forget the Bloomfield Cardinals with their tradition and what they've done at tourney time. And Coach Matt Britton has struggled against the sectional field at 1-4, but they play the type of tempo that lends itself at this time of the year. As we both know, they can limit possessions. They'll play a packed-in 2-3 matchup zone and make shots difficult to hit. And then, so they're going to be a handful at this time of year. And then I think North Central and North Knox, South Knox, up and down years, but definitely capable of knocking somebody off.
You know, Coach, that sectional, you know, you participated in it, had, you know, success in that sectional. And Eastern is being led by a first-year young coach, and he's done a great job with a team that he had to kind of bring together and build around. He's got some seniors, but he's got some young people. And as you know, he had to come in and take the reins and make that team and his program his own, and he's done a great job.
He really has, and, you know, people, I don't think, realize that two straight years we had seven seniors in our last two classes. So when he took the job, he did inherit a large senior class, but yet not one full of a lot of experience. The kid I mentioned earlier, Tyler Bruff, can shoot it, but really offensively he's getting some contributions from people I'm even a little surprised of. One I'm not surprised is Curtis Steele, just a 6'3 senior that just plays with a ton of energy. But just to come back after the last 2 years that we were able to have and get this team where it's 12-7, one of the sectional tri-favorites, I think speaks volumes for him.
That's, you know, Sullivan, you know, Coach, I can remember years ago when he first got that job, and one of the things he wanted to do was build a tradition. And he even mentioned to me one time at a clinic years ago, he said, I'd like to put something in place like Jack Butcher has at Ligoti. Obviously, to put something in place like Jack, the great Jack Butcher did, is a tall order, but he has built what has been a traditional, successful program at Sullivan.
And you talk about styles. I mean, Coach Moore's style is not a la Jack Butcher, but they press, they run, and they're doing the same thing that they did, you know, 5-6 years ago. You know, he makes changes, minor changes, but his kids know his system. They press you 2-2-1, and they run some 4-out-1-under motion, and they just execute, and they're just so strong and athletic, this team this year. I know they're maybe a year away, but, you know, we both know that sometimes that's the year you get it done. And I think they're head and shoulders above this field, even though I know Linton beat them earlier. They just play so hard, and they make your guards have to make plays.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the great, great tradition of the Ligoti Lions, Bar Eve, North Davies. They come into a sectional that you talk about Hoosier hysteria. If you want to think back to the one-class system, you still got major elements of the one-class system in that sectional.
You do, and I obviously if I my T-Birds are not playing, I plan on catching some of this action. Get a ticket from my good friend John Mullen down there at Ligoti. But, yeah, you've got three programs right off the top that just tradition-wise epitomize what 1A basketball is in the state of Indiana. And I don't mean that as a downgrade. I mean just because that's the level they played at. Because these three programs in North Davis, Ligoti, and Bar Eve – have traditionally been a tough out every night for every team they play, whether it be 3A, 4A, or whatever. But just the emotions that run into this tournament, it will be sold out every night. There'll be 4,500 people packed into Ligoti's gym, just every moment, living on every moment. And the communities where basketball is the livelihood, especially this time of year.
You know, you've got three pretty solid teams in North Davies, Ligoti, and Bar Eve, and they've all faced each other. And I don't mean to leave any teams out, but when you look at that sectional, those three teams are really the ones that people look at having the opportunity to cut down those nets. Ligoti has stumbled a little bit as of late, but they'll finish their season up or pretty much close. They'll play Jasper at the final game, and you'll get a real feel for where Pat's got his team, Coach Wagner's got his team coming into sectional.
Well, and I had a chance to watch him earlier, and you know he's got the Whitmer kid that Connor that's played 4 years of varsity basketball, and they did go through a little bit of a downslide, but you know as he told me, Coach Wagner told me earlier, he said, you know, we lost some really good basketball players from a state championship team that people just didn't realize how good they were. But even more than that, the roles that they played, you know, you just can't replace a Bryant Ackerman that played a point guard position and ran and controlled your team. So as those kids have got more experience, Ligoti's, to me, I think, you know, right there with Bar Eve, even though I think the Vikings just have too much talent.
Yeah, speaking of Bar Eve, they're just so consistent. I got a chance to see them against Ligoti, and I think I may see them one more time. They don't do anything what I call flashy. They're not going to come after you all over the court. They're just consistent about keeping the basketball in front of them, blocking out offensively, making the extra pass. Obviously, they've got some guys that can score, but they're also a team that is, you look at them and you think, oh, they must be senior dominated. They're not. They're a young basketball team that's winning a lot of basketball games.
Yeah, they really are, and we've talked about systems, and I know you and I both know what a tough out the Vikings are, but the faces change, but the names don't. I mean, those people that are playing at Bar Reeve, are their fathers I probably played against at Washington Catholic when I played. So really, things have been done through, you know, Coach Todrink, and then Coach Ulmer, and now Coach Hughes, which is, he's had just an unbelievable run at Bar Reeve. And from what they tell me, it's not going to stop anytime soon. But, you know, they do those little things. This team of Vikings may have more size than I've ever seen on a Bar Reeve team, but they've always just beat you because they've defended well, not giving you second shots, and then Brian's teams run they're set so well and execute them, and he's so geared to getting the people shots that need to get the shots, and that's great coaching.
And then North Davie's probably the third team of note in that sectional, and if I'm missing a team, you be sure to let me know, Coach. But you've gone into North Davie's. I know when I was coaching at Washington Catholic, we would always, it was a tough game with North Davie's. You've gone in there with your Eastern teams. Their present program and coach have just done a great job. They probably don't get the credit that Bar Eve and Ligoti are getting because it's Bar Eve and Ligoti, but North Davie's is a nice program and has another nice team this year.
Yeah, Brent Dalrymple at North Davie's has probably over the last 6-7 years had every bit as much success as those other two teams. And he's led by a senior guard, Nick Craze. And the unfortunate part for this young man is he had major knee surgery at the end of last year and missed most of the year. And then this summer came back and started early and was playing well. And then they basically got to the point where Nick could not practice. So he does not practice. Maybe the day before game, Coach Dalrymple just told me this last weekend, and then he goes out and plays on game night. So that has kind of hindered their progress, but no slouch by any means. At 14-5, they beat the Lions and I think the Vikings. So they're going to come in there, and you know the draw obviously is always big. You know, for a fan's sake, you hope that all three of them aren't in the same bracket. That would really be a shame. You know, and the other three teams, Reveille and Washington Catholic and Shoals, you know, have struggled through rebuilding years. You know, and we all know anything can happen in sectional play, but this is a three-horse race.
Now, guys, we have a question that was sent in for Andy and Coach K. It's from Randy. He's from Montgomery. He's also from my favorite hardware store in Ligoti at Greenwell Hardware. If you ever find anything, he's got it. But he asks, who do you think will represent the 1A South in the state finals?
Coach, I'll let you start with that.
Well, I'm going to go out and say what I believe from day one. Whoever wins this sectional is going to represent the 1A South, and I'm going with the Bar Reeve Vikings. That's my pick right now. I just think they have incredible balance. They've got the great coach, and they're not, you know, they've went on Ligoti's floor and won. I respect, you know, Coach Wagner to the utmost, but I just think the fact that they had beat him once during the year, it's going to be awfully tough to beat him again. And I'm going with the Vikings all the way to Indianapolis.
Well, having seen Bar Eve and Ligoti play, and you know, I know North Davie's has a solid team and has a style of ball that can be successful against both those teams. A lot's going to depend on the draw, but I do think the representative is coming out of this sectional. I like Bar Eve because I feel like they have what you just said, the balance. I know Ligoti beat them on their court, but there were some situations that played in the game that a lot of people wouldn't know about. Bar Eve, in the last minute, less than a minute, Bar Eve had the ball and an opportunity to either score or take the lead, and there was a wet spot out on the wing on the right side of the floor, and Bar Eve twice popped out there, and the player fell down while he was trying to get the ball, and it ended up going back to Lagodi, and it helped to preserve the Lagodi win. Having said that, I think that there were some things that I thought, after Barry reviewed the tape and Coach Hughes spent some time, he can make some adjustments defensively and take some things away from Lagodi on the short corner baseline area. Lagodi did a great job of getting the ball in the elbow to Whitmer, and he was able to find some people underneath in the short corner baseline area that got behind the defense. And, Coach, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about, and I think Barive can take that away. So I'm not sure I'm ready to commit to Barive or Lagodi, but I do believe one of those two teams is coming out of there and has a chance to go a long way. Okay, so great question by Randy. We appreciate it. Coach, is there any team that you see in your area that's potentially a surprise team for the in the tournament run?
Well, I think, you know, in our immediate area, I think, you know, I like my T-Birds coming in and surprising people. Again, that draw becomes so huge because if you've got to get through the other two favorites or even three of the top four, it's going to be very, very difficult to win, you know, especially when you're making that trip down to, let's say, Bicknell three times. But a team that, and we really didn't focus on this sectional, but the Edgewood Mustangs are a team that's probably as hot as anybody, and I know they play in the Greencastle sectional. They've really been playing really good basketball as well, so I think they're going to be a tough out, no question about it. And you know, I think at Barive or at Lagodi, I think any of those three teams could win this thing. And you know, Nick Craze probably is the best individual player down there. So sometimes a senior like that's really sacrificed a lot to get to this point, he may be a kid that just goes off on somebody because he's very, very difficult to guard. And you know, he's a game changer and a tournament changer. And I really believe everything he's been through, he may rise up and you know, have that big, really big game, and they'll beat, you know, two tough opponents that maybe they shouldn't. So, you know, watch out for the North Davies Cougars and another really good coach in Brent Dalrymple.
Coach, before we let you go, another up in your area, another group of schools that our listeners I'm sure would have an interest in. You've got Bloomington North and Bloomington South, Bedford North Lawrence, right in that area as well. Just a couple quick comments on those teams and do they have the opportunity? I know Bloomington South has had great success over the years in the tournament, longtime coach, and any thoughts on those teams as far as in that area?
Yes. One thing that I do get to do, because I'm close in the area, see these teams and read the newspaper on both Bloomington North and Bloomington South. You know, North is 11-7 and South is 9-8, and a very disappointing season. I know for Coach Holmes, he had a lot coming back, and he really thought this team might be another one of his elite teams, and it's just not worked out. So I know there's been, you know, chemistry issues, just getting guys to play hard, and he's got a freshman by the name of Tanner Blackwell. Remember that name, because I think this kid's going to really be a special player. Both of those programs, you know, are sitting in a good situation, though Columbus North is 19-1 and had a really good year, and then our good friend Brent Chitty over at Columbus East, he's 11-6, and he's got a very senior-laden team. So, you know, I got to say that's a four-team race. And, you know, East Central's 11-9, then Tom Beach, Shelbyville team is 4-13. They've struggled with a lot of youth. So Columbus North's probably the favorite, but I wouldn't count out Columbus East or either of the Bloomington teams because they both play hard. And they both play a tremendous schedule. My good friend Jamie Hudson will be, you know, in with New Albany and Jeffersonville, and he's got a real young team. And probably Jeffersonville, from what many people tell me, is a big man away from being a state championship contender. So they're probably the favorite down in that region. I'm not sure who hosts that one this year, but so there's a lot of good basketball to be played, and it'll all get started with the anticipation of the draw on Sunday evening.
Yeah, I got to see Jeffersonville earlier in the year when they were in Evansville, and they've got a really, really nice club, some good athletes, some good offensive weapons, a guard that can just he can just flat score. And Coach, you know, we've gone through this for many, many years, the sectional draw weekend, and you sit around as a staff, and you go through all the scenarios, and you make your own bracketology mock drafts, and you talk about, well, if this happens and that happens, and you'd love to have just, if you get a bye opportunity, you can play on the weekend, you love that even better, because there's nothing worse than playing during the week and being ousted right away and have to go through that whole week of sectional week.
I really enjoy the coaching comments, and you and I have both made them. You know, if you play the Tuesday game, you know the guy's going to say, hey, we really wanted to play right off the bat and continue our momentum, which we both know that's you really want the bye. And then if you get the bye, you're saying, well, this is great. We need to rest up and have, you know, take care of some injuries and so forth. So I always laugh at all those comments, and you know, we all say them, and they're all the same. But basically, you know, everybody wants to play, and I don't think anybody would lie. They'd all love to have the bye, because then you get a chance to sit around and prepare. And even though you don't know who you're going to play until maybe a Tuesday or a Wednesday night, you still like the fact that it keeps you in that same pattern of a Friday-Saturday game situation. And I know the Thunderbirds want the bye game.
Yeah, speaking of the comments, there's a couple others that I remember we've all said, and my dad said when he coached, and coaches will say for years, if you're the favorite, well, you know, everybody's got to play the game, and if you play the favorite, well, you got to play the best sometime to win. At some point to win it, you might as well play them right away. And if you're the favorite, you don't care who you draw, when in fact you know you want to draw a team that you feel you can beat. I mean, it's what you say and then what you really think. And coaches are no different than fans. We create the scenarios that we'd like to see in order to give our team the best opportunity to win.
Well, and I along that line, I'll just go out, and we both know this. There is so much pressure on this week, and it's such a exhilarating feeling if you get to Saturday night and you get a championship, and it's so agonizing if you do lose in the tournament for all these young men and these coaches. You know, I miss it tremendously, but if you're one of those guys that's on the losing end, that agonizing feeling is just hard to describe. It's just, well, the other side is a feeling like no other. Sectional basketball in Indiana is where it's at.
Well, it's the highest of highs, but it's the lowest of lows. And unfortunately, Coach, and we know this, the lows last longer than the highs, because usually when it's the highest of highs, you got to go play the next week. And if you're in the lowest of lows, you got a long, long spring to think about it and get through it. So, but it is one of the most rewarding vocations out there. And I don't call it a job. I call it a vocation. Coaching takes something more than just someone who wants to go to a job. You've got to love it. You've got to care about it. And you've got to care about the kids you're coaching and teaching. So it is going to be an exciting time. And for the coaches that are listening, you've got the tough week before you get into the tournament, because you've got some games to finish up. You hope your team's playing well. You don't want to get anybody injured, so you got to deal with all of that. But, Coach Igel, great to have you again. We'll get back with you at tournament time. Always a pleasure.
Thanks again. And anytime I can talk round ball, I love that, especially with my good friend, Coach Schulteis.
Well, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable.
Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I gotta work on my game.
No. Don't think of it as work. The whole point is just to enjoy yourself.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. And before we get to the rant, Coach, do you have a note for us?
Yeah, I got a comment that was sent in. And this is from Steve from California, Joe, down in the San Diego area. He says, I came upon your show by accident, and I love listening. I have family back in the Midwest, and it makes me feel connected. Love your conversational interview style. Just enjoy listening to the sports talk. Well, Steve, we appreciate the note, and we hope you're listening out. Continue to listen out in the San Diego area. I got to tell you, Steve, wouldn't mind being out in the San Diego area doing the show from a remote. So maybe you can invite us out there sometime.
Yeah, not in the budget yet.
All right, Joe, we're getting ready for the rant, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We got Kurt Guxell and Don Schultheis, and we're ready to go.
Well, I'm going to start, okay? So, Kurt, get yourself ready, and Don, buckle in, and Joe, I want to bring up a couple things. It's not really a question that we're going to get into really the hard discussion, but, you know, Kurt, you and I talked about it earlier in the week. Bossy has a talented junior in Jaquan Lyle. He's one of the top juniors in the state. And a couple of people had commented to me and asked me, you know, he didn't play against Harrison. And, of course, Harrison is really considered the top team coming out of the South right now. And we heard different things. I know we heard that he was late to get on a bus. I also heard that he might have had a confrontation with a JV player that ended up causing some problems and kept him from playing in the Harrison game. Either way, I want to add that he's just a young man. He's just in high school. He's got a lot of great things ahead of him, and hopefully going through this experience, I know Coach Burkhart wants discipline in his program, and I would just say that for those listening who asked me those questions, I think he will be back and ready to play basketball for Bossy. So I did want to touch base on that. All right, is Roland playing or not playing? The news came out in a news release from both the Reds and Scott Roland that he declined to come to the Cincinnati Reds spring training. And it doesn't look like he's going to join the Reds this year. He came short of saying, I'm retiring. In fact, he did not say, I'm retiring. He said, I want to keep all my doors or options open. Kurt, any news or update on the Roland situation?
What part of I'm being like Brett Favre do you not understand?
Oh, wow.
I don't think he wants to go to training camp. Those guys don't like going to training camp. Why would you want to spend like a month and a half doing something that you can fall out of bed and do in like in a week's time?
Yeah, but Kurt, you're not insinuating that he's going to be tweeting pictures of, you know, sorted types of things.
No. No. Like Brett Favre. I'm just kidding. I think, you know, if he doesn't say I'm retired, he's leaving the opportunity to come back. I just, knowing him, I just don't think he wants to go to training camp.
Well, maybe he's got a little bit of rehab to do yet. Maybe he's rehabbing and resting that shoulder and thinking that, hey, in the next several weeks, that could really improve his situation.
Well, you know, guys, I kind of agree a little bit with Kurt, and I'm going to put a spin on it. I talked with some people this week concerning this very thing, in that why would he go any sooner than he needed to go? He's been in the league 17 years. The more he uses that shoulder, the more swings he takes, the more fatigue he's going to put on it. So I really think I kind of lend myself to agree with Kurt a little bit. I don't see how it is an advantage for him to announce and go any sooner than he would need to. Coach Wright, I mean, it's like riding a bike for him. He's done it so many times. And I really don't think it's going to be adverse to the pitchers and catchers because he hasn't announced anywhere, or adverse to the rest of the team. I mean, baseball is a little bit different as far as when you go out on the field than maybe basketball would be, or football would be. And I think he would have time to get himself ready to go and be there mentally and physically, and I just don't think it's going to be a detriment to any team he would join.
Well, and he told me last year he wasn't a big fan of the Arizona spring training either, where they were the Reds train as opposed to where the other teams he used to play on trained in Florida closer to home. So that's maybe part of it too. Who knows?
What about if he does choose to play? You know, obviously a team's got to come after him. The Dodgers had shown interest earlier in the year. Ned Coletti came out about a week ago and said they weren't having any talks with him. That doesn't mean they're not having him now. But if you looked at some of the teams around the league, Kurt and Don, Kurt, a couple of teams that might need a Scott Rolen, even if he might go through a period where he has to take some games off, still has a good glove. If his shoulder feels good, he can still hit the ball. Are there some clubs out there that you could see as possibly using a Scott Rolen?
Well, not off the top of my head, but it's a situation where maybe there are teams out there that are going to try to work some young guys in there at third base in the early part of spring training. And if they can obviously tell that those guys can't cut it or that teams run into injury problems, I think he still wants to play regularly. And if there's a team out there as the season approaches and then he can pick and choose, I think that's the way that, you know, they're his representation and that's what he's thinking. I mean, again, I don't know, but I mean, that's a good scenario that I can see taking place.
Do you think that the Reds, Kurt, told him he wasn't going to be an everyday player, and so he backed off of that just to see what, you know, all his options and doors could be opened for him?
I think so. Yeah, I think so, Don. I think in the beginning, like I said last week, that there were people in the organization that said that he still should be the everyday third baseman. And there were people in the other half of the organization, you know, kind of thinking that Todd Frazier should be the guy. I think that's why the Reds were kind of waiting a little bit, and I think that's why Rolen was waiting a little bit. So I think you're on it there. I think he still wants to play every day, and I think now the Reds have made a commitment to having Todd Frazier play third every day. And, I mean, hearing the comments of Dusty Baker, it didn't seem like he was too worried about not having Rolen back there. But, again, it was pro sports, any kind of sports, that's subject to change in the next 5 minutes. But I think you're right on it there. I think he still wants to be the guy somewhere.
Hey, we got a caller very familiar to the whole group. Calling from Florida, I believe, Jim Skilly Skillman, known far and wide in Elwood. So,
in Elwood.
Jim, what do you got for us?
Well, in Elwood, of all places, I'm far and known. I'm wide. Hey, I gotta enter into this, guys. Knowing all you folks there, you're totally off base on the Scott Rolen thing. I just want to tell you, living in the Tampa Bay area part of the year, Scott's going to play for the Rays this year. I just want to throw it out there because he's going to do the Roger Clemens. I'm going to play home games. He's going to be healthy. Got Evan Longoria that he can kind of mess around with. He can do a lot of things. But I think he's going to be in St. Petersburg come this season.
Well, if he is, it might be because he stays retired and he's down there enjoying the sun.
Oh, no.
I cannot see Tampa Bay as his spot.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he can play home games, can he? Dude, help me out here. So, anyway, that's not why I called him. The fact that Kenny Schulteis was putting a spin on this, a quote-unquote spin, that just tore me up while I was listening. So nice.
Get her down there, Jim.
I'm sorry?
How's the weather down there?
The weather has been great. I zipped over to Daytona yesterday to add a little support to Bola Masters project over there at the Speedway. The weather's pretty nice right now. It's in the low 60s. It's going to get really cold starting tomorrow, and I think it's going to be a very cold Lucas Oil 200 tomorrow when Bo straps in. But, Joe had asked me to talk a little bit about that. You guys all know Bo pretty well, and I think part of the audience does out there. But the one thing I wanted to throw in here is, this isn't a harebrained type effort from Bo. He's been a racer for a number of years, and he's got his stuff together on this project. And as I drove back last night after the practice got rained out, I thought to myself, we all know Bo well enough that he could be sandbagging a little bit. So he was fast at the start of the year. He was probably the fastest car on the track in their first practice. And yesterday he was by himself out in the track quite a bit. So I just have a sneaky suspicion. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, K-Boy. But I have a sneaky suspicion that Bo could be in the top five after qualifying today. So he's got Jeff Bodine that's been added to the team as far as a mentor, coach, spotter. And I don't think Jeff Bodine would come over and help Bo out, if he wasn't fast. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, Jim, I don't think there's any doubt that this is legitimate all the way. I've known Bo for a lot of years, and the fun side of Bo is great, but when it's competitive and when he's focused, there's nobody that gives it more than he gives it. And when I read the article about him participating as a rookie at 50 and yeah, putting in the time and the energy and the finances to do this, and was able to read the article and really get a feel, I mean, this is legitimate. This is the real deal. And I can tell you, knowing Bo, he is out there, and he may say, we'd like to be in the top 10. That guy wants to win. Whether he can or not is not going to be the purpose. He's going to finish as strong as he can possibly finish. And I appreciate you calling in and talking about it, because this takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And you have to have your ducks in a row, your I's dotted, your T's crossed. If you're going to compete in this kind of a sport, I mean, you risk your life when you go out there on the track.
Yeah, and it's you're racing for your life when you really look at it. I mean, these guys, it's big boy racing. This is, the third level. But there's some young aspiring guys that are going to be in this race. There's older guys like Frank Kimmel and some of these guys that, have been there for a long, long time. But, as I talked to Bo yesterday and away from the team and everything, he's a little, you can tell this is on his mind. He's not going out there with a little bit of caution, with what's going on, because he is a rookie. He's had really zero competitive oval track racing, and now you're going to, if you haven't been to Daytona and you see those banks on the track and just the speed they're going to be going, I mean, picture ourselves here. I'm 53, and to be a rookie and jump into one of those cars and strap in and pull the belts tight and away we go, that's you got to have some to do that, and obviously Bo does.
Well, I'm pretty excited for him, because to make a commitment like that, he talks about the banking on the racetrack, and I mentioned earlier in the show, for those not familiar, when we talk about a racetrack banking, I mean, it literally is that. You slide down. You've got to know what you're doing, and you've got to understand how to handle that track, and he's serious about it. Just listening to him talk about it, I'm just so excited for him. And after you talking about going and actually talking with him and seeing it a little bit, you really feel comfortable, or not comfortable, but you feel good about where he can place in all this.
Oh, I think one of the things, I used to do a little spotting in the IndyCar series, and I wasn't even a great spotter. I had one of the worst drivers on the track at the time. But knowing that he's got Jeff Bodine up there above the track, and giving him some instructions while he's racing, I mean, that gives him a, big head start on everybody else. I mean, they've got good spotters, but for Bodine, I mean, he's been everywhere on that track. He knows the good lines, the bad lines. And just when Bo talks about it, he is so much more confident going into today and tomorrow, primarily tomorrow, knowing he's got him up there to, you know, and Bodine more than likely will be able to get him some friends on the track, which you've got to have with those older cars, you know, and all that. So, but some of the things that Bo probably doesn't have experience with is some of the bump drafting that he may experience with the older car, things like that that may – I don't think it'll catch him by surprise. He knows it's coming, but you know, he's going to learn by baptism of fire, you know. So while we're confident that he's going to want to win this thing, you know, I want him to get through it as safely as possible too.
Yeah, and he'll do it competitively. You know, but before you go, Skilly, I want to switch a little bit here, and Don and Kurt are welcome to jump in as well. You're an avid golfer. And a very good golfer, and I say that respectfully. And your sons have been golfers. You're a golfing family, and we're moving into the golf season, not just from the amateur side, but the professional side. Tiger has started out pretty well. Looks like he's got his game going in the right direction. Phil comes out and wows us on a weekend. Are you getting pretty excited about the PGA? Does it look like the golfers that most people relate to as far as the well-known golfers are getting themselves in a position to gear up their game and be ready for this first major?
My first reaction is no, because I think but I think Phil may have shot his wad this past, you know, on the weekend before last. His play yesterday didn't follow up where I thought he would be. Tiger's going to be Tiger. I still think mentally, Kenny and Donnie, I think he's going to struggle. I think, and I've seen it, you know, I played my best golf back in 1998, and things happen in life, your business, whatever, you know, you grow things happen, change. It's hard to get it back, and especially in golf. And at their level, I mean, everybody's so good. And if Tiger's not 100% on that weekend, you know, I don't think these guys waver anymore when they see Tiger Woods. They go after it. But I think Brent Snedeker, his start to the season has been unbelievable. I mean, think about, you know, he's been a runner-up. He's winning. You know, gosh, he's really good. I mean, golf is so competitive. We were just talking about this, my brother and I, yesterday as I drove back, about just look at the mini tours. I mean, he was telling me how many people were qualifying for a senior PGA event, you know, and the tour event coming to Honda Classic in West Palm, there's like 190 guys qualifying for 24 qualifying spots to qualify for a Monday qualifier. So, I mean, it's so competitive. I'm excited on one side of it, but on the other side, I think we're going to have no names winning some of these tournaments, Ken.
Do you see Rory coming in with a good year?
Oh, yeah. The equipment thing is overblown. I think if you guys watched the press conference with Nike, which from a marketing standpoint, I love watching that kind of thing and seeing what's going on, way overblown, for God's sakes. I mean, it was ridiculous how they introduced him and everything. So he had the weight of the world on him for that first tournament, and he will have for a few more tournaments. But you know what? When Augusta gets here, Rory McIlroy is going to be right there. So the equipment thing is way overblown.
Well, Skelly, thanks for calling in, man. Thanks for giving us the update, giving us a little bit more insight on Bo. And of course, you're an avid golfer, and let's hear from you throughout the year on the show, and keep us up to date on what's going on the links.
We'll do that, and of course, go IU, and excited for those guys. So it's hoops time too. So we're getting cranking into that March Madness. So I'm fired up for all of it right now.
All right, thanks for joining us, Skilly.
Hey, you're welcome. And again, if you guys want tickets to the Rays down here when Scott plays here, give me a call.
Will do. I want to remind our audience we've got 1 minute left on our live show, but we'll continue into the podcast. And I want to bring Kurt and Don back on here. And, you know, we had a situation coming up or come up where IU gets beat at Illinois and then comes back with a dominating win against Ohio State at Ohio State. The polls come out, and even with the loss, IU stays number one. I think the pollsters got it right, but and I think it's about time that just because you lose a game, you don't necessarily lose your spot. I don't think it's an indication at this point in the season who's number one, who's not number one. Don, were you surprised that the Hoosiers held it, or did you expect them to stay number one?
Well, I think I was surprised because I think we live in a world where, you know, you're only as good as your last game. And, you know, they look at the Illinois loss as like the end of the world. And but IU did have a great opportunity to come back on the road against a very good Ohio State team and really dominate the game, as you mentioned. But I was surprised because Duke seems to be the overall marketing favorite out there, and they held their own. And so for them not to get the unanimous number one in both polls, I was surprised. But I do think looking at the whole body of work and the improvement and where the teams are, I watched Duke the other night, and you know, they're a good team. They're not a great team. I think IU is the number one team right now. That can change. You know, Michigan State is vastly improved, and they're going to be right there in the mix. And I've watched Miami play one time, and they look like they are just getting better and better. I had heard on or read somewhere where they have players that are in their fifth and sixth year down there. So I guess maturity does help. But right now I think the Hoosiers are number one, and I hope we can stick it to Joe's Boilers tomorrow and retain the spot going into the Michigan State game.
Hey, Kurt, you know, the Hoosiers came back with the win at Ohio State, and I thought they did it in a way that was very convincing of what the strength of IU is. And I know you know where I'm going with this. They used the inside game of Cody Zeller to really put them on to really what I think created a foundation in the game, but also put them on a run. Is this something that you think the Hoosiers, can we see the Hoosiers focusing in on saying whether he takes it to the basket to score or not, we have got to keep him involved in the game?
Well, I think that's what they're going to try to do, but it's easier said than done. Again, it's a three-way street, four-way street. They're going to have to they're going to have to look for him. He's going to have to. I thought he was really active, and that's what I thought was the key. Not only just posting up, but he was chasing loose balls and getting putbacks and things like that. But that's against the Ohio State team that's probably soft inside. We'll see when he goes up against Knicks and Payne on Tuesday night. Can he roam freely in there? Can they hit him when he's open? Will they miss him? So I think it's going to be a game-by-game thing. If he can do that and put together two or three games where they look for him and he, in turn, gets open, then you'll have your answer. But Tuesday night's going to be a whole different game, if you will, against a team that's inside. And you know how Michigan State plays. I mean, they will fight you in the post. And I mean, that's going to be the big key right there.
Yeah, and I would also add that Ohio State, as good as we'd like them to be, they're 0-5 against top 25 teams this year. And then the next game out against Nebraska, which the Hoosiers dominated throughout the second half, Zeller wasn't as involved in the offense, although he was in foul trouble. So the next time out is going to be a big key. And maybe the question comes back, Don and Kurt, maybe it's not just Crean's philosophy with the game plan or Oladipo and Sheehy and those guys getting involved. Maybe it's what Kurt just said. He was very active in the Ohio State game. He was chasing loose balls. He was asking for the basketball. Maybe part of this is Cody Zeller. Maybe he needs to, Don, be a little bit more forceful in the game.
Well, I think you saw that in the second half when he picked it up. I thought that one of the great plays of his career this year was when he picked that guy, I guess he was hedging a screen or something, and picked that guy's pocket and took it all the way in for a layup. And boy, when you got a guy that's 7 foot tall that can do that, you know, turn him on. But, you know, he's going to have to get himself pumped up and maybe a little bit more emotional where, you know, not sky high type of stuff, but locked in and focused and saying, hey, I got to figure out what they're going to give me and what I can do. And then, you know, not wait for it, but go take it.
Yeah, you know, Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com bracketology expert, was on earlier in the show. And if you, for our listeners who have joined us late on the podcast portion, if you didn't get a chance, please go back and listen to that. You know, he had IU as a number one seed at this point. He had Miami as a number one seed at this point. But he came back also within the time we were talking. He said, the bottom line is this, that everybody I named as a number one, you know, may not be a number one. And that's obvious. There's a lot of games left. We've got conference tournaments and things like that. But he was really, really felt that the winner of the Big Ten is a number one seed. It may not be IU. It may be Michigan State.
I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah, it could be. And then what kind of weight do you put on the tournament, the conference tournament then? You know, if it's going to be a different team. But, yeah, I mean, between the top teams in this Big Ten are going to be all shooting for number one seeds. And it's just going to see who gets high at the end of this regular season to decide who's going to be the Big Ten champ and perhaps the number one seed.
Hey, Kurt, I got a question for you. I noticed that you posted a quote from Tom Crean regarding Thad Matta on your Facebook earlier in the week, and I was just wondering.
Oh, Kenny didn't like that, by the way.
Do you sense that there's a little bit of tension between those two? Or?
Well, not anymore. I think they've kind of buried it. Now that Crean's pretty good, he's kind of, you know, he's not as bitter towards other people than he was.
You're
back
saying
in the
that
day
Crean's bitter when he's not as good?
He was bitter when Deshaun Thomas and a bunch of those other guys left the state.
Well, there's no doubt. I wouldn't like it either. But, boy, that was a pretty powerful quote. I had never read that Tom Crean had said that about Thad Matta. And all the coaches that I've heard comment about Thad Matta has always been really positive and that kind of thing. So,
well,
just
it was a direct indirect quote around the time that some of those guys were going to Ohio State, but I think they're all fine now.
Well, you know, I didn't like the quote, and Kurt, you knew that, and all I've got to say is in defense of Thad Matta, and I don't need to defend him, but he's earned his way up the ladder everywhere he's been. He's been successful.
Yeah.
He started as an assistant. He earned his way up at several different spots as a head coach and has been successful at every one of them. And if he gets in the backyard of IU, well, IU, just as they've been doing, as Coach Crean's been doing, he can push that fence row back pretty far by just continuing to recruit the way he's done and have success. I got a little, you know me, Kurt, I read your stuff and I love your stuff. And I've told you that. But when you pile on Digger Phelps and rip him.
No, let's not compare Digger Phelps. I'll give Matta 20 times more credit than I'll give Digger Phelps. Let's not go there.
I'm just saying you didn't know your facts about Digger Phelps. And if you looked up his record and understood he'd been to the Final Four and he's in the Hall of Fame 398 games, he's in the tournament 14. I mean, come on, man.
You can argue with that record.
While, even though he does say some things that I obviously disagree with as well.
He was a better coach than he is talking about the game right now. I'll give you that.
Okay, we got the IHSA tourney coming up this Sunday. Kurt, you've been around it many years. Don, you've been around it many years. We've got class basketball. It makes it all a little bit different when the draw comes up. But still, just real quickly, your memories over the years about the draw, Don, starting with you, just your feelings and your memories of the draw.
Well, I think that every year when I hear that the draw is coming up on Sunday, I just think of growing up and, you know, in our family, our dad was a head basketball coach at Jasper, and he'd go out and do fast breaks, and all the coaches would be there as the draw would come out. We'd be listening onto the radio, and we'd be sitting around back then, and we'd be putting our own draw together. We would put different scenarios together on paper. So for me, it's just an exciting time. And up here in Indy, you probably don't have it to that degree, but there's a couple of great sectionals up here. One, you know, with Cathedral Tech, Warren Central, Ron Colley, LN, and the other one with Carmel, Hamilton Southeastern, Noblesville, Zionsville, Fishers. I mean, those are two at the 4A level that are going to be tough. And you could have, you know, the eventual state champion coming out of either one of those in the 4A area. So for me, it's just adds to the whole March Madness and excitement both at the high school level and then as we move into the college scene.
And, Kurt, you still deal with a lot of the coaches at tournament time. And, is there the, as Joe and we talked about it earlier, is there that quote, Andy Igel and I were talking, is there those quotes that you just guarantee are going to be said to you by the coaches when the draw comes out?
Oh, yeah, the coaches, I mean, Donnie hit it right on the head. It was so great about back in the day. Watch Hillier Gates on TV, and they'd have, like, the cards, you know. Each section will have their own card or whatever. But now the coaches are the ones that are still locked into the draw. I mean, the average fan, I don't know if they get all excited about the draw. They just, okay, it's out. We'll look at it on the Internet. We'll listen to it on the radio and whatever draw is drawn. But the coaches will give you that coach speak, and they know how they want it to come out. There's no doubt about that. They've got it played out in their mind, and they know what they want to do and how they want to go about accomplishing things. Yeah, there's no question about that. The coaches will say a lot of different things once that draw comes out Sunday.
Well, March Madness, as we get to the end of February for the Hoosier State or whether it's college basketball, there's great memories, there's great history, and there's more to be made. As Don said, there's some great players and great teams in the Indy area. There's some great players and there's great teams down here. One of the sectionals that will be drawn on Sunday will be the Washington sectional. Of course, Jasper participates in that. Vincennes Lincoln, Washington, Pike Central, Heritage Hills. It's a good sectional. The teams aren't great this year, but Kurt, I think when I look at that overall sectional, I think that is a sectional that at least four of those teams have an opportunity, depending on the draw, to win. Four of those teams could win that sectional.
There's no doubt about it, and that's why, I mean, especially here in Jasper, they've got to be convinced. They've got to know that they can go over and win that sectional. And they have just as good a shot as anybody else. They've played well against all those teams in that sectional, at least in periods of the games that they played against all those teams. I mean, to sit there and hear people talk about that they can't go over there and win that tournament, it drives me nuts. I mean, especially this year, it's wide open. They've made excuses down through the years about the seven-footers up there, whatever, and that was their excuse a long time ago. Now it's time to win the darn tournament.
Well, Heritage Hills has a nice squad, and they're young, and they're peaking at the right time. Jasper is just good enough if they're hitting the basket, if they've got the short way to go. They're physical, and physical teams can take advantage in the tournament. Vincennes Lincoln has the best record, but when they've played maybe out of the conference and out of their level, they've struggled against some of the better teams. Now, he's got a good club, though, and Washington, of course, is on their home court. They've lost close games to the members of that tournament. They lost a game with Lincoln and Jasper. Both of them were close games. So I agree. Now, Southridge has to feel good, and I don't know everybody. Tell us a little bit about the Southridge sectional tournament.
It's going to be really good, especially at the top. Southridge right now is coming in 14-3. Perry has lost a couple of games. They lost the other night. It never supposed to be one of their better players didn't play. But that's going to be a tournament. That draw will be a big deal in there. Can Southridge and Perry Central avoid each other there in that deal? Both those teams are really, really good. So, you know, but then you got some teams that think they can still go in the tournament and win, like Forest Park. They think they own that place because they have. And, once that sectional game comes, they're going to think they can win. North Posey, that's the team that knocked Perry Central off the other day. They're going to think that they could win. But Southridge and Perry by far are the main teams in that. Modern Day has kind of hit the skids. They've lost like six out of their last seven. They're not the same type of team, but you never know. They're perhaps a dark horse in there too.
And, Kurt, Perry Central, the team that a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, especially in the local area, may not, they're a very good team and a lot of people don't know about. When you look at them from a strength standpoint and kind of compare them with Southridge, I mean, they are legitimate all the way.
Well, I know you'll understand this, but I look at Perry Central, they're all about 5'11 to 6'2". They take the ball when they get it on the wing, and they just drive it toward the paint as fast as they can. It reminds me of like a regional type of team that you have in all the different classes, just that quick, hard nose. They don't shoot it well from the outside, you know, most of the time, but they just find a way to get in the paint. They press, and Matt Carter's their coach, and they kind of play a little up-tempo like he learned under Bruce Pearl and those guys down there, and they're very good. But on the flip side, sometimes that doesn't translate to one of these sectional type of ball games where it's a half court. Maybe they call it tighter. And that's what I think Southridge is going to have. And you've seen them with their height inside with O'Brien at 6'7", Thompson at 6'6", Reller at 6'4". They've got two good guards in recent Weber that control the game. But Perry Central has been really, really good, going back to your first question. So that's how I look at that between those two teams.
And over at Boonville, you've got Evansville Bossy, of course, and Memorial feeds in there. Boonville's playing a little bit better as of late. Probably Mount Vernon would be the second best team. I think Evansville Bossy could come out. We should come out of there, but you never know in the 3A. And then down in Evansville, you've got at North, at the new North Gymnasium, you've got North and Central and Evansville Harrison among those teams. And Wrights and Harrison, of course, is going to have to be the class of that sectional. But, you know, sectional time, it only takes you some foul trouble and a stubbed toe, and all of a sudden you're looking at trying to save your life. But those will all be good sectionals in the southern part of the state. And then Don, in the central part, we had Kyle Ned and Reap of the Indianapolis Star on with us last week, really, he talked about the teams the way you have been telling us all year long, and he's a fan of Carmel, and he's a fan of Fishers, and he's a fan of a lot of those teams. But he thinks that Cathedral is hitting its stride at the right time.
Well, I agree with him. I mean, it just depends on team chemistry. I think when you get in the tournament, you got to be a good team. And I think that having Colin Hartman out for Cathedral many games in the first half of the year really set them back. They ended up with five losses. I think they're 15 or 16-5 now. They play Ben Davis tonight, and then tomorrow they play a team called La Lemure, and they're a second ranked nationally in the country, according to some polls. And so, you know, they're going to get tested again. Interestingly enough, Carmel last weekend gets beat by Hamilton Southeastern, and they both play in the same sectional. And Carmel had a 5-point lead going into kind of like the last minute and a half, and ended up losing that. That's uncharacteristic for them. So they're going to be extra motivated. Then Hamilton Southeastern turns around and gets beat by Indianapolis Pike in the middle of this week. So it's just a game of musical chairs. But I'd say that right now I give the edge to Cathedral in their sectional. It's going to be tough, though. Again, you got Trey Lyles and Tech, and you got LN with Jack Kiefer, who's been there for years and had some great teams. You've got Warren Central with Devin Davis. And then on the other side, in the Carmel sectional, playing at HSE, I give the nod to Carmel right now. They are a tough, tough bunch, and they play well as a team.
Well, the great thing is, and Kurt, and we start hearing these names out of the Indianapolis area, and they're all names that we're seeing on the recruiting trail. We're seeing on Rivals. We're seeing on Peagues. We're seeing on the different recruiting sites. Yeah, Indianapolis is just full of good basketball players at this time. And that's not to slight the northern part of the state or the southern part of the state. We have our share all the way around. But I want to remind people, I've seen it. I've been a part of it. I've experienced it on both ends. Doesn't matter if you have the best player at tournament time. It just doesn't matter. Doesn't even matter if you have two great players at tournament time. Your team has to come out, and they have to function, and they have to be at their best for two games or three games. And if they're not, you're out, Don. You're done.
Yeah, as I said a minute ago, I think you really got to focus on who's playing the best as a team, and you know, who can get a little momentum riding into it and get that confidence edge. And some people, even those great players, they tighten up when the lights come on. The crowds get bigger and louder. And I'll tell you, these sectionals, they're not as great as the Southridge sectional that we attended for years in the day, but some of them get very close to that, and some of the prime timers don't perform, and that's, you know, you got to have more than just a guy or two. You got to have a team that can get through it. And like you said, it's not just one game. You've got to put together two and three games in a row to get through that sectional. So it'll be exciting, and we're looking forward to it.
Hey, Kurt, you've seen a lot of games this year, and I mean a lot of games. Folks don't understand his workload. It's amazing. Officiating. You know, I'm not going to lie. As a coach, we prepared for the sectional tournament. We looked at the officials that were being placed at our site. We talked about what different officials allow you to do, what different officials handle the big games better and seem to handle them better than the other games, what official maybe was coming in that we didn't have a lot of experience with. From your time on the game circuit this year, what's been your overall feeling about high school officiating this year and coming into the tournament?
Oh, that's a tough question because we have a really no. I mean, I tell them to tell these guys all the time. We have a really good officiating association up in Dubois. It goes up into Martin Davies. You know that group of people, and it's different than it is in the group in Evansville, or the different in the group over by New Albany. But to be honest with you, it's not been very good. And even the veteran officials will tell you that because nobody gets in it anymore. Nobody, you know, some of these older guys are getting out. Some of these really, really good officials that you've experienced, if you think that anyone were any good. I don't know if you agree there, but you know what I'm saying. It's just it's an occupation that people aren't, you know, taking part in anymore, and they're trying to get in young officials. And I think it also hurt when they went to the three-man crews because there's an official on one of those crews almost in every gym that shouldn't be there. They never had to be there. And, you know, nobody knows what each other's calling. A guy will be right in front of the play, and he'll make a bad call, but the guy that saw it better maybe across the floor won't say anything because it's not protocol to show the guy up or whatever. I just think the three-man officiating crew and the lack of new officials, it makes it where it's not very good. I mean, it's not a knock on that guy's actually out there working in most cases, but it's a different, like anything else, it's different.
And you know, Kurt, what you're saying is true, and there were a lot of officials that I liked. I just thought I call them gamers. They knew they were on display. They knew that as much as the players were playing out there and the coaches were coaching out there, the officials were a big part of that game. They were focused. They knew their stuff. They were in right position. They understood a little bit about the teams that were playing, and they allowed the strengths of the teams to come out and be a part of it. And then you had officials, the game was just too big for them. The teams were too big for them. The athletic ability of the teams were too big for them, and they struggled with it. And then you had those officials that said, I'm going to be the focus of the game, and that isn't the official you want at all, because the people didn't come to see the official. Although it's important, and they can lend a lot to the basketball game, and I would encourage anyone listening who has any thoughts of it, if you want to be a part of something special, officiating puts you right out in the mix. But they want it to be bigger than the game, and that's where the hair on the back of my neck would stand up a little bit, and probably my voice got a little bit louder and things that came out of it. But, Don, officiating in the Indianapolis area, has it been a positive thing for the game, or do you see what Kurt's seeing down here?
I think I would agree with Kurt. I think that, you know, the game, the way the game is the way they're allowing the game to be played now, they almost have to go to three officials because the physicalness of the players, I mean, I equate it back to what college used to be when we were, you know, in grade school and high school, and they just allowed so much, and so much more is going on the floor that you almost need the three-man crews. But I agree with Kurt from the standpoint, because of that and because of the, you know, people are not motivated to become an official. And I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying that we don't have the numbers of good, consistent officials. And I agree with you, Coach K, that I think the best official is somebody that's going to be consistent and that's going to manage the game and not try to impact the game and its outcome, because that's when I get rowdy in the stands. I just get frustrated when officials are not consistent, meaning that, you know, one thing they'll let go by, but the next time down they'll call it, or they'll be calling it basically the same thing on one team versus the other. Or where you get into a big game and these officials, they want to be the game. And it's not about them. It's really about two playing, and they've got to find that balance, and the good ones do.
Yeah, there have been some great officials on the high school level, and we know a lot of them who, I mean, they could go, they could do a junior college game in the afternoon or a Division III level college game in the afternoon and come back and do a varsity basketball game or at night and be as good and as fresh and as ready as if they would, that was their first game of the day, and they took it very serious, and they understood that they had a part in the game. They were a part of the show, so to speak, but they understood their part, and they helped facilitate a game that the players could decide the outcome. And isn't that what we all want? We want the players to decide the outcome.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, it's weird if you're a coach or even in a fan, if you see a certain official, you almost have a premonition to know what's going to happen that night, that something's going to happen. And on the flip side, when you get a good crew, you know everything's going to run smoothly. So, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, nobody wants to go out there and get yelled at for an hour and a half and, you know, for what they, and the officials don't do it for the money, obviously, because they don't get paid that much. But it's just tough to find officials, and I think that's the big problem. If there's one thing that the state is looking at and all these officials associations are looking at, is just the lack of people getting in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's turn tables real quick and a couple things before we end Friday's show. Pitchers and catchers are reporting Major League Baseball spring training. I know, Kurt, we all follow baseball, but I know you love baseball and pretty good baseball player in high school and believe you're even in a state championship. But your feelings about the upcoming Major League Baseball season, a couple of teams in particular to watch, a couple of pitchers maybe that you look to have a great year on the Major League level.
Well, again, we talked a little bit about this last week. The team like the Angels, last year they got Albert Pujols. This year they added Josh Hamilton. They opened up the checkbook for some starting pitching. In the American League, they're awfully good. And then, of course, the Tigers are really good with the lineup that they run out there. Sometimes their pitching other than Verlander is sometimes questioned. The National League, you know, you got to go with the Giants there because of what they've done. They've got a good – not only, you know, on the field, their off-the-field chemistry is really good. And, you know, the Reds, I mean, they put together a pretty good lineup that they run out there every day. And if they get solid pitching from Cueto and, you know,
Edison, you know, some of those guys like Latos, those guys continue to get better. Question with the Reds is they're going to make Chapman a starter, and can Broxton, you know, close down games? I mean, he has in the past, but sometimes they think he's a, you know, a half a year type of reliever before they get to him. But, I mean, you know, one thing about baseball, everybody that puts a team out there is optimistic when you start right now, but those are some of the teams I think are really good.
Kurt, I have a question for you. Have the Cubs made any improvements in the offseason where they can get this thing a little bit closer to being on track? I don't even know last year if it was even on track, but I know there's a lot of Cubs fans probably listening in, and I myself am just interested.
Yeah, me being a Cub fan too. I think they're going along with Theo Epstein's plan of building within, restructuring their system, which I know Cub fans are always asked to be patient. You know, we've been patient for 150 years, but you know, it's, but that's, I mean, it's hard to say, but that's what, that's the path. You know, they've tried all the other, you know, let's go out and buy some players, let's do this, let's do that, but I think they're, you know, sticking to a plan. They've drafted some decent players, they've restructured their system, and they didn't really make a lot of noise in the offseason. They signed Edwin Jackson, who pitch for the Cardinals and about 10 other teams. So pretty decent pitcher, but, you know, they haven't done much as far as this year is concerned. I mean, that's not what a lot of Cub fans want to, including me, want to hear, but that's the track that they're on.
Well, if Samardzija is, your biggest piece of the puzzle that you're trying to get inked to a long-term contract, well, I think you've got some time that you need to build yet. Yankees. I don't see it, guys. Unless that division is weak or so, I'm just struggling trying to understand. Even though they got some big name players, they're older.
Oh yeah.
They're inconsistent in recent
and
years.
Hurting.
I don't see it, guys. Tell me something that gives me hope for the Yankees.
I can't, other than Mark Teixeira. Robinson Cano's decent, but they are constantly, and I always equate it to Notre Dame football or Purdue football. How in the world can you be those two teams and not have a quarterback? I look at the Yankees. You know, they bring Andy Pettitte off the scrap heap last year and actually pitched pretty well. How can that franchise not go out and, you know, command a pitcher with all the money that they got or have somebody even want to come play for them? Their lack of pitching down the last few years when they've not been a factor is what's killed them.
Yeah, I'm just not feeling the Yankees, but baseball's just getting started, so we'll have a lot more hot stove stuff to talk about as we go on in fantasy leagues and everything else. Don, couple things, and then we got to end this thing up. Butler lost a tough game against Charlotte at home. Jerry Palm still sees them, if they continue to play well, as a three seed, which I think is pretty exciting. Are the people in Indy still talking Butler Bulldogs?
Yeah, everybody up here is excited about Butler. The interesting thing is that, you know, a couple of years ago when they made their runs to the championship game, everybody was behind them. But when your kids come home from school and they're getting in arguments with, you know, because they're Indiana fans and they're getting in arguments with their buddies about basketball because their buddies are Butler fans, you know that Butler's really arrived more on a consistent. It's not like a, wow, they made this run. So Butler has really built a name for itself. And, you know, the loss the other night, people can't forget that Andrew Smith was out of the middle and Charlotte was a in-the-paint team and very physical down low, and I think having Andrew Smith in the lineup could have changed things. So I think Butler is playing really well. You know, going back to our points about playing well as a team, they play team basketball, and they've got some good players, you know, Rodney Clark from the outside and Roosevelt Jones and others, but the sum of the parts, the way they play, is a lot better than the individual parts, and that's why they're successful, and that's why I think they're going to end up with a nice seed and probably a nice tournament run.
Is there any substance to the Kyle Neddenreep reported substance to Trey Lyles is showing legitimate interest in Butler?
Yeah, Trey Lyles was there Wednesday night to watch that game. And he put it in the paper that listed Butler one of the top six that he's down to. Now, that list also includes Duke and Florida and Louisville and Kentucky. So, you know, there's a lot of great programs there. But, boy, you know, for Trey Lyles to make a decision to go to a Butler and even to consider that at this point, because he's a top five player in the nation in the junior class. And, it just tells you where Butler has moved to and the class of that program and the respect that it has. So it is legitimate, and I think he's seriously looking at it. I still think that he's going to go to Kentucky because, unless something changes, I think he's one and done.
Last but not least with you, Don, can't end my portion with you without asking about my godchild, Matt Schulteis, and his Cathedral team was playing in the city freshman tournament this week. Are they still alive?
Yeah, they won last night, so they move into the Final Four. They're going to be playing the semifinal game tomorrow morning against Indianapolis Tech's freshman team, which they split with during the year. So that'll be the rubber match, and Tech's a good team. And then if they win, they'll move into the championship game that'll be played a little bit later in the afternoon on Saturday. So it's been a good season, and, you know, Matt's really come along. And, again, all the credit goes to the Coach K basketball camp that he attended last summer under your guidance and teachings. And it's just he's looking forward to doing it again this summer.
Kurt, last thing with you, Missouri Valley Conference basketball. The conference started out with Wichita State and Creighton getting all kinds of notoriety. Jerry Palm sees, maybe only one team coming out of there now, not sure. Aces started the conference pretty strong, but they just struggled as of late. Creighton, Wichita State, do you think there's a way both those teams could get in the dance?
Well, Andy Katz says that Indiana State's fans should relax that they're in. But they've Creighton, Wichita State, they've had some bad losses, like Indiana State has had some bad losses.
Yeah.
Indiana State, and that's a lot of people or Sycamore fans here, their resume, they've beaten like five top 25 teams, but they lose to Drake, lose to Southern Illinois, and it's just weird how they're – and Missouri State, who was 7-18, they lose to them the other night. But there are people talking about Indiana State being before those – mishaps being at a large team too because of what they've done against the good teams. But to answer your question,
Jerry Palm did mention Indiana State, and he said if you look at their body of work, if they could hold it together and win down the stretch, they might have a chance to get in. He was very impressed with their portfolio.
Well, yeah, I mean you take the team, you know, they knocked off Miami, and that loss or that win gets better each and every day because of what Miami's doing. Ole Miss, a bunch of teams like that. But Creighton, they've had some just head-scratching losses. I mean, they lost to UNI the other night. Shouldn't have lost to them. And they came into Indiana State and got blistered. I mean, but it's just too bad for the Valley. I mean, I think it's a pretty good league. You know, Evansville, you know, I think at times they're playing pretty good basketball, but they can't, you know, get any traction. So, I'd have no problem if they put the three teams in there. I mean,
yeah, Evansville, I believe, has got Creighton coming up, and hopefully we'll have Coach Simmons, a friend of ours for years, on at some point to talk about that before the season wraps up and his Aces. Last thing, Kurt, what do you got this weekend? I know Jasper plays at Floyd Central, a game that is on the road, but I think Floyd Central's got six wins on the whole year, so Jasper has a great shot. What have you got going basketball-wise this weekend?
I've got South Spencer at Southridge tonight. South Spencer, they're around the 500 mark. Southridge, obviously, as I said, 14-3. Looking forward to having Northeast New Boys Girls basketball tomorrow. They won their 11th sectional last week in a row. Coach Mata, as you know him, you coached against him. They're going to get ready to play in the regional tomorrow. against Trinity Lutheran at West Washington. So I've got to prepare for perhaps two games tomorrow here this afternoon. So looking forward to that because, you know, it's one thing I like about doing their games. That place will be filled with their fans. I mean, if anything harkens back, and we all like to harken back to the supposed glory days, that certainly is it. So I always
Kurt,
enjoy doing
that. How good
are
the Lady Jeeps? How good are the Lady Jeeps? Will I be able to see them up here at the Fieldhouse come state tournament?
It's going to be tough. They return. I mean, they were there last year. They went to the A title game last year. They're
right.
Pretty good, but they've got a good couple of teams that are going to have to get through this weekend and then maybe in the semi-state. But the way they play, their culture, you could see them back again because they play a lot of good teams during the regular season. That's the difference between their, you know, situation in Class A as opposed to some other ones. I mean, they've beaten every DuBois County team, whether it be Forest Park, Jasper, Southridge. They've beaten the Heritage Hills. I mean, they go on. And, again, they weren't a proponent of this mess that we got now. So I'm all for them, and I like the way they play, and they have a good culture of winning and the way they go about playing defense and moving that ball for a good shot. So I think they got a good shot.
Well, as we say every week to our listeners, get out there, whether you're in Indiana, Kentucky, Illinois, California, wherever you're at, go out and see some high school basketball games. Support local sports in your area. If you've got a pro team in your area, go out and see them, college team. It's a great place to have some fun and talk and meet with your friends and just vent a little bit and get yourself ready for the week. We're going to end things. Don and Kurt, it was great to have you again. I'm going to be running out to my mailbox to check and see if I got my Valentine's card from Joe or not. I didn't get anything from him yesterday, so I'm hoping it's just a day late. And, Joe, will I find my Valentine's Day card in the mail from you?
It's in the mail. You know how the mail is slow.
Coach. Coach, one more thing. Hey, well, how much did you talk about Joe's guy being asked to leave that game the other night? I couldn't listen earlier. Did
oh,
you guys
we,
touch
we
on that?
On it.
We touched
okay,
on Matt Painter's exit, and the question we had a question from a listener wondered if he was frustrated with his players or he's frustrated with the officials. My comment was, and Kurt, Don, you can give your opinions before we go. I think he was frustrated with both of them, but I think he was also trying to find a way to light a fire under his guys and see if they could somehow muster something in that game. And right now, Purdue is just in a confident struggle. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they are. They are young, but this season's running out, and it's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, that didn't look like a Purdue team. I mean, every night that I watch them, they get further and further away from what kind of a coach Matt Painter is. I mean, we all kid with Joe and whatever, but he's pretty good, and he's done it before. But I don't know what I'm watching now out of them. And I think you're right. It was a combination. He wouldn't have used those words that he used with that official on his players. So I think he was about 80% mad at the officials based on the language and the lip reading, and about 20% frustrated with his guys. But hopefully they can get it turned around. If you're a Boilermaker fan, it's just been a weird season for them, and that just get thrown out of a game like that. It doesn't happen every night.
Now, Coach K, did you ever get technicals to try to motivate your teams, and did you ever get thrown out of a game with a double T? I absolutely got technicals to try to motivate my guys. Sometimes, you know, people come back and say how rough I was on the officials or how vocal I was, but I didn't get a lot of technicals, and I did almost get run from a game. And the official and I worked it out where I put my head down and kept yelling at him, and he looked away, and we just acted as if we weren't confronting each other. And he said, if I continued to do that, he wouldn't run me. So that's how I handled the rest of the game. There you go.
Good. There you go.
But the words were choice. I just didn't look at him while I was saying them. Hey, it's been great coming to everybody again on Friday. The draw's coming out for Hoosier High School Hysteria this Sunday, and I know a lot of people will be listening. Enjoy it, and we'll be with you, I believe, Joe, from a remote location next week.
Yes, from Buffalo Wings and Rings. Join us there. We'll be there live 11 to 1, and, you know, come, and we're actually going to get out of our pajamas to do this one. We're gonna be actually, you know, I think Kenny's wearing a 3-piece suit. I think I'm wearing a sweatsuit. So we'll see.
Yeah, we appreciate the people at the Wings and Rings in Jasper for having us. Ann Bennett does a great job there, and obviously the other ownership is one of them, Mike Bartley, my brother-in-law. We're happy to be there, and I know Joe will buy somebody some wings or a wing. I'm not sure, but somebody will get something, and maybe Kurt will join us live in person.
Yeah, I plan on being there. That'd be great.
Absolutely. We'll save a bone for you. Don, if you want to come in from Indianapolis, I'm sure we'll have a ring or something for you.
Well, that's tempting, so I have to look into that. I may show up. Are you going to have a crowd, a live crowd, live audience?
Yeah, we'll have a live audience. Now, what we allow them to say, we'll just have to wait and see.
Awesome.
Hey, Joe, can you get some clear plastic panels to put up in front of us in case somebody starts throwing something at us? But
yeah,
if they throw some wings, I might catch them and eat them for later. But
it'll be bulletproof.
Folks, thanks for joining us again. We'll see you next week from Wings and Rings in Jasper. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Benz Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.